talk about decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Understanding must arise during these times of unparalleled deceit. A view into the depths of society upon which this country has fallen. A storm brews upon the horizon. It's been said that those that have the eyes to see and the ears to hear will play a paramount role in the furthering of humanity and civilized society. But can civilized society and humanity survive the coming conflicts not seen since a dawn of time in ages bypassed? But you can find true forms of information and knowledge in abundance at revolution.radio, freedomsleps.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Stand upon the right side of history. Right side of history.
General
Holder,
you've
got to
get us out of here now! I won't let you down. I won't let you down, son.
Revolution.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Like that. And the properties he described, as he would turn it harder, it would become harder to turn, would, if you think about it, apply to the use that he claimed it was being used for. But you would think if the police and certain civilian agencies or whatever knew about this device, that we would all know about it, right? Wouldn't that be big headlines? International line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. How's it going?
It's going all right, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Rochester, Michigan. My name's Mike.
Mike, you're on my international line.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to write down some other numbers, but...
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to ask you to... I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to call one of the other numbers, Mike. Yeah, that's for people outside the country only, like our 505-year-old immortal friend in Europe. You see, it's very hard for them to get through, so if I don't strictly enforce that, I'm in trouble. Okay, on our special line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. How you doing?
I'm all right, sir.
Well,
sounds like you're shuffling the phone in your hand. You're going to have to hold it steady and speak to me.
Yep. Let me go ahead. I'm sorry. I was using a wireless headset. There.
Never, ever do that.
All right. I got you. But my name's Philip. I'm calling from Los Angeles.
All right, Philip.
Listening to you on XM 165.
You betcha. 165 is where we are.
Yes, sir. And I just wanted to tell you something. I was actually born, this is kind of, I'm embarrassed about this for some reason, but I was actually born on an alien world, okay?
That's a good way to start out.
You know, and the thing is, I've had contact with other children who were born on alien worlds.
All right. How do you know, Philip, it's an obvious question, that you were born on an alien world?
Because my father is an alien. His name is Ra. I'm sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have pointed out his name. But he actually lives here on Earth with me.
Ra.
My mother decided to stay behind on her home world. And I don't really know how to translate its name to your language. So the best I could translate is like initials, like A, the number 2, and M. Okay?
Huh.
So, anyways, I was born in an alien world. And when I came here to this planet...
Well, that makes you an alien.
Yes. Well,
you are an alien. And
I guess, you know.
No guessing. No guessing.
No guessing. Okay,
Ra would agree with me. You either are or you aren't.
Yes, okay, I guess
no,
I'm
a little bit of pregnant on this kind of deal.
Right.
All right, but, so you are an, from what planet do you originate?
Well, like I said, it's hard to pronounce the name of it.
Well, that's right.
Initial it out, A2M. That's what it's called in your language.
Well, can you actually say it?
I can't. I could read it. You know, if you had the text in front of me, I could read it, but I can't really speak language. I was taken from the world, my planet I was born on, at a very young age. I guess you guys would consider like 2 years old on here, on
yes,
Earth.
Yes.
And so, I apologize. I'm a little nervous about being on the phone. And so, from what I understand, I'm not going to fascinate you with stories of, worlds far away, because there are lots of other people to do that. I want to bring something kind of quirky to your show tonight.
What?
Children who are born in other worlds, when they come to this planet, humanoids who, you know, were either conceived on your planet and then brought back to our planet or other planets for some reason.
Listen, Philip, it's a great place to hang everybody up. I've got to, because it's top of the hour. Can you hold on?
I could, yes.
All right, then. I'm right. Charging you with holding on. Stay right where you are. Trust me, we will be right back. Couldn't ever miss the end of this story. From the high desert in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. The mountains high and the valleys so deep.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And it's a burner. I'll tell you, even if you've never taken a ride, you're on board with lots of people who have. Good morning, I'm Art Bell. We began the program, beginning of the show, by asking for anybody who's had physical alien contact to call our special number, which, by the way, is area code 775-727-1222. And boy, have we been getting some hits. PvP. Boy, that is one I have got to catch. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM, and here, once again, is Philip, whose dad is Ra, who's from another planet.
Yes.
Yes. Anything else you'd like to add? I didn't want to cut you off there.
Well, I just wanted to add, like I said, wanted to add something quirky to your show instead of telling you tales of far-off worlds and everything like everyone else is doing tonight. My thing is I've been talking to other kids who have been raised on who've been born on distant planets, who have been raised here back on Earth, and they seem to develop really weird eating habits, I've noticed, that, you know, I've done some research on this. And, like...
What do you mean by weird eating habits, for example, what?
Not really eating habits, just weird desires. I can tell you, as a matter of fact, the whole pickles and ice cream thing, that originated from kids who were born on distant planets who came back to Earth.
No kidding.
It did. And my thing, when I turned 13, it'll hit you. It'll hit alien kids at any age between, I'd say about 11 to about 15. And I'm 21 now. When I was 13, I had the most unusual craving for maple bacon. It was really weird.
All right. Weird cravings and pickles. Pickles and ice cream. I thought that was reserved away for pregnant women. Boy, I'll tell you. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, Art. As I said, Diane from Linwood, the lady that called from New York.
Yes.
I had that experience 20 years ago, and it's taken me 20 years of having more and more experiences to finally fit all together what happened to me that day.
All right. Well, that lady impressed me mightily. I mean, there was just, I don't know, there was something about the way she told her story.
Well, you're an expert at listening to stories, so you would know.
Yeah, it just came through as absolutely real, and it obviously resonated with you. So what do you mean you had this?
Well, 20 years ago, on my 30th birthday, I went up the street to take my dog for a walk to this park.
Right.
And I was standing in the middle of the park on this baseball field, and I was just looking up at the sky when the next thing I knew, I was across the street from this park, and I knew the streets very well, across the street and up on the hill, and my back was turned, and I was looking up at the sky.
Yes.
And I see these three most beautiful colored things. And they were gigantic. The one on the left was a ship. It was a dark ship, and it was just glowing. But in front of it was, I guess you would call it a maritime wheel. And then on the bottom, you know how I can only describe on the bottom of the ship, it was on one of those, like in the 14th century or something, on a stem-like deal.
Like an old sailing ship.
Yes, that's what it was.
But in the sky.
And then in the middle... And then in the middle, I looked at the middle one, and I thought him to be a king, and he was wearing but a small crown, a small ring, and then at each point was these jewels, and he was looking down at what he was holding, and it was a globe.
This sounds like a cartoon almost.
Oh, many of these things do. And then the third thing was about, as I remember, was about five rows of what I thought to look exactly like fractions that I learned in junior high, fractions in a row, all going down. Now, I said to myself, I heard myself say, does anybody else see this? And two, nobody else was around, no cars, nothing. And I thought, oh, this is just normal. We see this every day. And then I was back in the park. We had an out-of-body experience.
Well, what you think so? That other lady said that, when she got back, the world, the streets, the cars, the buzz of New York City, it was all back. But during that time, it was all gone. Same
I'll
thing, huh?
I'll never forget what I saw.
And you're not suffering, you know, from some delusion or it wasn't a dream?
No. And when I was back in the park, I just walked quietly home, not shaken, but just something that had happened to me. And then in the 20 years of having out-of-body experiences, I realized
what happened
that day.
Got you. All right. Thank you very much. So she's saying what happened to the both of them was an out-of-body experience. And I suppose it could be viewed in the way they viewed it, right? as though they were taken elsewhere. Well, I guess in a sense, yes, they were, out of their bodies to an entirely different, what? Time? Realm? Dimension? I don't know. And then back. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the program. What is your first name?
Sandy.
Sandy. Good to have you. Where are you, Sandy?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Austin. Okay.
How are you?
Quite well. Listening to all kinds of really interesting stories this morning. Do you have one, too? Yes. Do you have one, too?
Yes, sir. This happened about 25 years ago. I put my son to bed. He was about 5 years old, and I had gone to sleep. And all of a sudden, I was, like, going through this tunnel really, really fast, and there was these bricks, colored bricks along the side of the tunnel.
Do you recall, I mean, what were you doing when this began? You said you had put your son to sleep. Were you walking, standing, sitting? Had you
No, I was asleep.
You were asleep.
I had just put him to bed, and then I went to sleep.
I see, all right.
I had gone to bed.
All right.
And all of a sudden, I'm going through this tunnel with all these little colored bricks alongside of it. They were lit up in different colors. And
why is this real? Why, Sandy, why is this not a dream?
Because it changed my life.
All right, go ahead.
Before this happened, I was afraid of death. You couldn't even say casket or cremation to me. I had such a fear of dying.
Mm-hmm.
And 1963, on September 11th, my father was killed in a car accident.
Sorry.
And I was really close to him, and so it really affected me, you know. And so I was really, really afraid of death and just really bad. And
so you had a near-death experience.
Yeah, and so anyway, I'm going through this tunnel, and I get to the end of it, and I'm going really super fast. And like I'm in a vacuum, just being sucked through the air.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get to the end of the tunnel, I just hover, and I'm totally coherent. And there's this big, huge, pale blue misty circle to the right of me. And I'm there, and I'm thinking, you know, like, what the heck's going on, you know? And I could feel the mist on my body, but then when I looked down, I couldn't see my body. I had no body,
mm-hmm.
but I was thinking, coherent, totally, you know. And then all of a sudden, I was beckoned into this light, this mist. And as I walked into the mist, it started to open up. You know, there was like an opening came up, like the wind was blowing the mist apart. And then there was this, it was all open like I was in a room.
Yes.
And on the other side of the room, my father walked out of the cloud into the middle of the room. And I ran to him, and I jumped in his arms, and I was, you know, really happy to see him. And I was crying and everything, and I was, like, you know, just totally, the feeling I had was indescribable. It was peaceful, loving, just joy, you know. And anyway, I was talking to him, and I was just like, you know, Daddy, 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 you know. And all of a sudden, all these other people started coming out of the cloud, and they were relatives and friends that had died. And I was like, oh, this is just so wonderful. This is so beautiful, you know.
It never occurred to you that you might be dead yourself?
Well, no, not at the time, because I didn't know a whole lot about near-death experiences at the time. This was like 25 years ago. And
I know,
I'd
but
never...
just the association of meeting your father who had died and all the other people who had died, at that point you've got to start to say to yourself, if you're really sitting there or standing there thinking rationally, hey, these are all dead people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. I did realize that they were dead, yeah. But it was so, the feeling was so beautiful that it was like, it's just really weird. It's
okay.
And so anyway, my son, who I was real close to, you couldn't pry me away from him. You know, nothing could have taken me away from him. And the strangest thing was, while I was there, I said to myself, well, I said I wanted to stay. I didn't want to go back. I wanted to stay with my father. And I said, you know, Jamie will be okay. Jamie will be all right. He'll be well taken care of, you know. And then this voice from behind me said, you have to go back now. And I said, no, I can't. I don't want to go back, you know. And I said, Jamie will be taken care of. Jamie will be taken care of. And all of a sudden, it was like this giant hand reached and grabbed me from the back and just yanked me out. And then now I'm going backwards, back down the tunnel. And I look over my left shoulder, and I see myself laying in bed. And then all of a sudden, there was this big slam and a pop, and I woke up. And when I woke up, I was soaked, literally soaked from perspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa, what the heck's going on, you know? And so I hadn't seen my brother for a couple of months. And at one point in time in my life, I was seriously contemplating suicide. And I was really, even though I was scared to death, I was having a bunch of hard times. So anyway, I talked to my doctor, and he didn't know anything about it. And I talked to a couple of people that were paramedics, and they said that it sounds to them that I was clinically dead. Okay, and then I told them about what happened. And then one day I was watching TV, this was years later, and this little girl had drowned, and she was talking about going through the tunnel with the colored bricks. And I just lost it, you know, it's like, oh my God. But the point is that after this happened, about...
Was there anything you had done that night to have brought this on?
No, I was perfectly healthy. I was perfectly healthy. I have no idea why I died or how I died, but...
Well, I'll tell you, it's a fascinating story, and I thank you for calling. And it's a classic near-death experience, that's for sure. But I don't know. You know, if Matthew Alper were here, you know what he'd say, right? He'd say that the human's greatest fear is the fear of mortality, the fear of death, that we don't know what's on the other side. And that any experience like the one the young lady described would be the brain's natural way of protecting itself, or even of, in her case, dealing with her father's death. So I think you have to take that story, fascinating as it was, and put it in a gray box and say, I don't know. There's some people in ufology that do that. I like that analogy. You kind of take it in the gray box and go, you know, on the one hand, it sounded like a really classic NDE story, didn't it? But on the other side of the coin, you can see how her brain would have been stressed to produce exactly what she just told us about. And I don't doubt for a second that she experienced it. I'm just trying to put together what she experienced. International Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, hello there. How are you?
Quite well, sir. Where are you?
I am calling from Water Valley, Alberta, Canada.
And your first name?
It's Al.
Hi, Al.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Good. I'm not really going to tell you any stories or anything. I'm just curious on the curiosity basis here. Would you, on that hole in Siberia, you know, where they heard the hell hole or whatever you want to call it?
Yes.
Would you happen to know if they're going to be sending like a fiber optic camera or something down there to, you know, for curiosity's sake, just actually see if anything is going to be happening down the future? Or would you know?
Oh, sir, I don't know. I don't think so. I think that the scientists that were there ran like hell, that they probably capped off that hole.
Probably.
And, frankly, after hearing it, and you know what it sounds like, I'm sure. Yeah. Been a very long time since I played this. Sir, would you volunteer to go down take a look at that?
Well, I wouldn't. If it was through a camera, I probably would.
Really?
But what I'm kind of, you know, is this, for what it, does it pertain to this deep or the hollow earth theory? Or
I don't know. You could find out for us.
I'm not going to find out nothing, sir. If someone, if someone else finds out, kudos to them.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Keep thinking about it. Take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
This is Olin in Culver City, California.
Yes, Olin.
This mad cow disease in Canada might be caused by chemtrails, which are spraying aluminum and barium on farmland for weather modification.
Well, it, a lot of things might be, but why do you think that might be?
Well, you interviewed William Thomas in Canada.
Well, yeah, we know that chemtrails exist, and we, to some degree, we know the makeup of them. But, I mean, why do you connect it to mad cow disease necessarily?
1 week before you interviewed William Thomas in Canada, George Norrie interviewed Mark Purdy in Great Britain, and that was on September 7, 2004. And Purdy said, mad cow disease is caused by barium and aluminum poisoning.
Ah, all right. Well, I see then how you reached that conclusion. I don't know. I don't know. But I would say this. If that was the causative agent, then you would think that mad cow would have been detected across wide swaths of America. Certainly the beef part of America where they've been noted, and I think we have not yet detected so much as one case of mad cow in the U.S. Just a wild shot in the dark there. First time caller line, special line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Turn your radio off, please.
It is.
Okay, good.
Hello, Art.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, my name is Ron. I'm calling from Youngstown, Ohio.
Ron, okay.
I'm 32 years old now, and I just have a strange, unusual, real short story that...
You're 32?
Yes, sir, I'm 32.
Okay.
And at the time, I was about 7 years old, I think, and my parents used to send the three youngest of us boys out of the five to my aunt and uncles up in Connecticut every summer for a summer vacation.
Ah.
And I'm not real sure how to explain what it was, but my aunt and uncle took us to my two brothers and I took us to a local lake. They used to take us to go swimming and just picnicking at. And my two brothers and I were out in the water. I didn't quite know how to swim yet, and the water was about chest high to me. And my two brothers were out a little bit deeper, and they were calling me, "Come on, come on, Iron, come on." And just being brothers, I know how they are, and I was afraid to go out because I'm thinking they're going to dunk me and grab me and hold me under and all that. and I kept saying, no, it's too far out. And they said, no, look, you know, look how, you know, it was up to their waist. They were taller than I was, but what it was, they were on a rock. And they were just trying to get me to come out there, and they were going to mess with me. And right on the other side of this rock was a really deep drop-off. And my two brothers, you know, kept egging me on, come on, come on, come on. And I didn't want to go because I knew they were going to do something. Well, my aunt and uncle ended up calling us in for that, you know, have a picnic, have a sandwich. And so my two brothers start going in. And as they start going in, after they got past me, I start going out deeper because I wanted to really see if it was still shallow.
Hold that thought, Ron.
Okay.
Hold that thought. We'll bring you back after the break. It is coming as inevitably as the sun in the morning. Ah, I'll be in bed by then, of course. You are all the woman I need, and baby, you know it. You can make this beggar a king, a clown, a fool.
Talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. Restless dreams I walked along, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were spared by the flash of a neon light, I split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one did disturb the sound of silence.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Oh, doesn't music sometimes just set the mood so well? Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and if you just tuned in, you're late. We began by, I don't know, sort of beckoning with open lines and a special line for anybody who's had actual physical alien contact. And oh my, what it's brought. Well, all right, back to our first-time caller line, just wide open this night. Hello there.
Hey, Art. Okay, well, as we're saying, as my two brothers, as they were heading back into shore.
You were getting deeper.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that deep, really, and what it was is there was a drop-off. There was a real deep drop-off, and my brothers were doing it to scare me.
Mm-hmm.
And they just wanted, you know, just as brothers do. But as my aunt and uncle were calling us back into shore for lunch, they started heading in. And I started going out a little bit deeper, just seeing if they were telling me the truth, that it still wasn't that deep.
And?
Well, Art, as soon as I stepped on this rock, and I took one more step, I dropped like a rock. And it was over my head, but I was just, I think, like I said, 6 or 7, so I wasn't that tall. And the water wasn't really that deep, but it was deeper than I was tall. And all I can remember, and I can actually remember it like it was yesterday. And this is the honest to God's truth, and I haven't told many people about this, some family, but not very many people, but I remember just going straight down into that water and looking up with my eyes open and just seeing the sun through the water and then seeing a figure, a silhouette of somebody coming through the sunlight, just reaching through the water and grabbing me by the wrist and pulling me out of the water and setting me back up on top of this rock. And it was a girl. It was a young girl. When I got out of the water, it was a young girl. And I wasn't scared. I wasn't panicking. But as soon as she set me back on top of that rock, I looked at her, and I started going to shore. And I got about 5-10 feet, and I turned around and looked, and there was nobody there. I mean, there was not one person around. There was no
guardian
girl.
Angel?
I don't know. I do not know.
Sounds like it. Sounds like you were on your way toward drowning.
Yeah, absolutely. I could not swim, and it was a young girl, 12, 13 years old. She was there, but she wasn't there. I mean, it was definitely something that is just strange and unexplainable.
Strange and unexplainable. Did you tell people on shore about it?
I didn't. I went back.
No, I understand. I understand.
Yeah, but it wasn't like I wasn't trying to hide it. I just was calm about it, and it was just really strange to me. And for years and years, I didn't say anything. And I finally told a couple of my brothers, told them about it. And I told my mom, and just, you know, but it's not something that I go and tell, you know, talk about all the time. But it was just something that I am absolutely 100% honest to God, know happened to me. These things do happen.
It's good enough for me.
And it's just happens. So people should believe that these things do happen out there.
Because they do. Thank you very much for the call. You see, these are pretty well-grounded people, simply, I guess, willing to tell their stories because other people are telling their stories. It's quite remarkable how that promulgates, you know, the way it spreads when people hear others telling stories that they normally just wouldn't tell. It opens them up. It has a way of just really opening them up. The similarity of the experiences does that. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing, Art Bell?
Quite well. Where are you?
Calling from the Bay Area, California.
Okay, and your first name?
My name's Jesse.
Jesse, okay.
A couple things. I was with a contracting company. I do telecommunication. I do infrastructure cabling. And we had a bunch of contracts at Loral Space Systems, Lockheed, and Lawrence Livermore Labs and Sandia Labs. And I've witnessed at these job sites that I've been at, a lot of laser technology that's been going on. And I've been in some of these buildings doing the cabling, and I've seen a lot of, like I say, laser stuff going on where they're working on, like, force fields around Earth to take out comets, and they're working with a lot of stuff, like, with atoms. And they were working with these atoms, changing like quarters and pennies to different shapes and different sizes.
Did you saw all this happening?
Yes. I mean, I'd be running cables in some of these buildings, and I would walk by different rooms where these engineers would be working, and I witnessed some of the stuff, and I would hear, you know, different
conversations.
Stories. Yes, and it was in some of the places that the buildings that I've been in. Were highly secured. I had to go through extensive background checks, and I just witnessed a lot of that stuff with moving atoms, moving shapes of the quarters, pennies, stuff like that. And while I was working there, there was a big conspiracy where a top security official he was from the CIA, but he ended up being a top security official for Lawrence Livermore Labs and Sandia Labs. And a Chinese, he started dating a Chinese agent, and a lot of files and keys were missing from Lawrence Livermore Labs where they were doing this technology at. And I just wanted to share that with you and with the people.
Well, that's quite something to share. I mean, if you had to go through all sorts of, you feel free to talk about it now, huh?
Yes.
You don't think there'd be any repercussions if they...
Oh, no, my bases are covered, and you know, so I don't think there's going to be any repercussions. But I've noticed a lot of laser technology going on. Like, I've contracted at Lockheed Martin.
Big controversy about lasers now, I'm sure you know.
Yeah, but there was a lot of stuff going on over there at the time. It was in the front page of the news. And the newspaper, and files being missing. This technology is going on over there.
But you, for example, you're really telling me you heard scientists discussing...
Engineers,
all right. Engineers discussing a protective, blanket around the Earth to prevent strikes?
Right, a force field where they had a big rock... With lasers, and they were trying to explode this rock.
Right.
And so what they were trying to do, from what I got, is eventually put these lasers on satellites up in space to blow up these incoming comets, maybe possibly missiles.
All right. That's absolutely fascinating stuff. They called it Star Wars, you know. That's what they called it, and perhaps that's what you were observing. Isn't that fascinating? I wonder if we have a developed, mature technology that could so protect Earth. And if we did, would they tell us? Well, probably not, right? Our government is, don't ever doubt it, built on secrets. So that kind of thing really could have been going on, and again, that sounded pretty credible to me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Mr. Bell, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Niagara Falls, New York, listening to you on 930 WBEN AM.
Way to go.
Okay, I've got a question for you.
Fire away.
Last year, you talked to Bob Lazar.
That's right.
And I don't remember what month or anything, but last Sunday you did an encore presentation.
Of that, yes.
Yes. And he mentioned that he helped a company called Tester.
That's right.
On a
develop a model, which I happen to have one of right here, yes.
Yes. Now, I was wondering, is there any way that I can get one?
You know, there's a pretty interesting question. I don't know if they're still available or not. I would imagine, I don't know, I'm really not sure. I don't know the answer to that question. If we go to Amazon or something and put in Tester Saucer. I don't know if they're still available. I don't think so, but I don't want to say for sure because I don't know. Oh, I'm sure you'll find one.
Yeah, but where would I look?
I just told you. Go to Amazon.com, or not Amazon, but what is it? The auction site. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but that, I don't understand that thing. Every time I go there...
eBay. Thank you.
eBay.
Yeah, go to eBay. There's put in Tester Saucer, and I bet you'll find one.
Tester Saucer.
Sure.
Okay.
Good luck.
I love your show, and I wish you were on every night.
All right, well, that's very kind. Thank you very much, but I did that for many a year. Oh, many a year. In fact, many of you wouldn't know, but going back into the 80s, I used to do... this program, 5 hours a night, actually sometimes 6 hours a night, 6 days a week. Can you imagine? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Sound like you're in Switzerland or something.
Hold on 1 second.
Get to the phone. Hurry.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Okay. Hello.
Yes, phone lady.
Yes.
Hello. What is your first name?
Monica.
Monica. All right. Where are you, Monica?
I am in Palm Springs.
Palm Springs. Okay. And you have called me because?
I have over a dozen situations that have occurred in my life where until I've listened to your show, I wasn't really quite sure what they were.
And now?
And before I did believe that they were some sort of alien contact or some sort of something that I didn't understand. And it was until I've been listening to your show for the last year that I truly believe it is that.
Alien contact?
Well, some sort of contact.
Based on what? What happened to you?
The first was in 82. I lived in Brazil. And I had a situation where I was 17 at the time, and I even called my parents because they were away at the time, and I said, I think a spacecraft has landed on our roof.
In Brazil?
Yes. And at the time, the maid, the chauffeur, everybody was asleep, and when I went to go even check with the security guard, he was knocked out, and it was the lights and everything. And when my father finally came home, he said, the following day, he said, don't worry, it was the water heater that exploded on the roof.
Oh.
And it was only until...
Well, do you think you were abducted? I mean, do you think you have had experience with alien beings?
Well, after that, I had a slice in my belly below my belly button.
Mm-hmm.
On the left side after that time. And then every couple years, I had a similar sort of experience.
All right. Well, it sounds to me as though you ought to go to somebody who can try and figure out what happened to you, maybe do a little regressive hypnotherapy, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and nail down what really happened to you. But you are one of, dare I say, millions, based on... the phone calls this morning, not that heavily solicited, I might add, an awful lot of people have had these experiences. I mean, just millions of people. If this is just a sample, a little sample of what we're getting this night, then it is millions of people. And it's a phenomena worth careful scientific examination. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Jason calling from Vancouver.
Hello, Jason. How you doing?
Hi, yeah. Am I on the air?
Yes. Oh, yes. You're on the air.
Oh, great. I've been listening for about 8 or 9 years. I've never called in before.
Welcome.
Yeah. I just I want to tell you a little story about something that happened to me about seven or eight years ago.
Okay.
I was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Around that time, I was riding on my bike with two friends down a street in my neighborhood, and I had a vision that I was on a horse and I had a torch and I had gone back in time.
Well, let me interrupt here for a second and ask you, if it's around the time that you were diagnosed with schizophrenia, then...
Well, I got diagnosed shortly after that, actually.
So this you're telling me this experience caused you to be so diagnosed. You obviously talked about it, right?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of things that were starting to happen around this time, actually. I was starting to think that I could read people's minds and stuff like that in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of walking around and taking people on these tours and showing them different power sources and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were certain placements in the city where I could pick places of power out. Like it was, there was one instance, there was a restaurant, this Dairy Queen, and has a view of the mountains. And, where the kind of the water, it's kind of on a peak area where you can see into the inlet, into the mountains. And I was taking people on these different tours where there was different power sources. So there was just a few situations. But I guess I never really heard anyone talk about mental health on your show.
All right. Well, we're doing that now. And, you know, there is a place for this discussion. Because some of these things obviously do cross the line. Now, I guess it's the job of the researchers and the scientists who damn well ought to be looking into all of this to make that decision about when it does cross the line. And some of it is not real. Some of it is a product of an ill mind. But then obviously, if you've listened carefully through the night, you know that much of it is not. Much of it is... seen, recorded, experienced by very sane, grounded people. So you've got to sort through it all. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
My name is Donna.
Donna, we don't have a whole lot of time, so where are you?
I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska.
And what happened to you, Donna?
Okay, in 1993, when my husband and I got married at the judge's chambers, here in Lincoln, right after we got done with the ceremony, we were talking to the judge. There was like little gold flecks, you know, real pale, like gold that floated down.
Really?
Yes, and the judge said, you know, I've never really seen this before.
And... Well, we're going to end this tonight on an up note, I can tell. So describe it again. Little gold...
It was just like, you know, there was little gold flecks, like little glitter falling.
Just from the sky?
Uh-huh.
Or was it inside?
It was inside in the judge's chamber.
See, that's even more impressive.
And he said, well, my goodness. We were just looking at it. Of course, we were happy, so we were smiling and everything.
Of course. And now, has it all worked out well? Have you lived happily ever after?
Well, we've had our trials and tribulations, but yes, we're doing just fine.
Well, little gold flecks at such a moment is that's a good omen, my dear. Listen, I got to go. We're out of time. Thank you
Thank
very much.
Thank you. Bye.
It's been such a pleasure spending the weekend with you, and here's the gal with just the right words to take us out of here. From the high desert where we do biz in the middle of the night. Good night.
Midnight in the desert. Shooting stars across the sky.
tomorrow, for the sun shine on you. Midnight in the desert, and we're listening. Ooh, we're listening to you.
Listening to U7 Radio. Help keep the station going by starting a relay stream or donating to server and bandwidth cost at www.u7radio.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Now from the archives of Coast to Coast AM, Art Bell describes a rather unfortunate on-air situation.
I've got next to me what's called a cart rack. It's a it's an affair with slotted little holes that hold the commercials and the bumper music and all that sort of thing. It came apart during the break, and so, you know, a bunch of carts fell down. As a matter of fact, I got them all down here. And so I thought I would fix it, and I ran into the other room and got a container of super glue. And I guess I hadn't put the top back on it, so I took a pair of scissors right here, and I cut the top off the super glue to get it to flow. Well, it flowed all right. It flowed all over me. So I tried to pick it off, but it was still flowing on my finger. And I think that I've glued my lips together. This is the dumbest thing that I've ever done by a country mile. I've actually glued my lips together. I did. In my panic, I ripped part of my lip off. Such a piece of my lip is gone.
Join Art all night long or any portion thereof. You never know what's coming next on Coast to Coast AM, and neither does the host.
Actually, a little piece of my lip in the ash right here.
You are listening to 7th Radio.
High desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones. Every single one of them covered like a great woolly blanket by this program called Coast to Coast AM. And I am your host throughout the weekend, and I'm honored and privileged to be doing so. It's going to be an extremely interesting weekend. We'll see who we can make angry this weekend. Not in the beginning, though. Let's first go through a couple of these sort of show things. Somebody asked me last week to how the program gets from here to there, how it gets to your radio, you know, that kind of thing. Well, the first big, giant step that it takes in that direction is from the uplink facility located here at my house. In a closet! So, for those of you who over the years have wondered what sends the signal from here to there, there is an associated parabolic dish outside that receives the signal sent from this stuff that's in my closet. And it's been there for, I don't know, about a decade or so. And I would imagine if that were to be replaced now, it would be the size of a suitcase or something. But that is a complete satellite KU-band uplink setup thing you're seeing in my closet there, which is where it has resided since the very beginning. That photograph is on the website, coasttocoastam.com. Simply click on Art's webcam, and there it will be, sitting in its closet, where if you don't want to look at it or hear it, you can just shut the door, and it's like it's not even there. And now, I want to promo tomorrow night a little bit. I'm going to do, it's going to be open lines. So, a lot of times a talk show host would like to launch a discussion in a certain direction for a program, and a lot of times it doesn't work at all. In other words, the audience will take it in the direction they want to take it, and that may occur tomorrow night, but I want to talk to you about oil.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the day, from this day to that, for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion, and as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Broadcasting live from the peak of Mount Wollumbi, the most easterly point of Australia. Welcome to the Freemanity Radio Show with your host, Spread Love, every Monday, 6 a.m. EST. We acknowledge and pay respect to the traditional owners of this land, past and present, to the Minyangbal, Nandawal, and Grakabal people of Bundjalung Nation, and all other mobs across the Red Plains and Mountains on country. Bugle Bear.
Now, but we're going to go over it and other good stuff. But before we do that, we've been forgetting. Book behind you, cigar in your hands.
Sure. The Emerging Republican Majority by Kevin Phillips. So it's going to be on the book list for this fall for VivaBarnesLaw.locals.com, where we review books, films, and have other conversations, of course. Cigars of Monte Cristo. So that'll be nice. And we got a mixture of, some white pills, some red pills, some black pills all mixed in this week. We have Oberlin winning finally, the Ohio Supreme Court turning down the appeal of that big defamation case. We have Netflix sued for inventing Anna. Turned out that wasn't the only thing they invented in that show. We have Alec Baldwin being sued for libeling a Marine family. The only thing is why people keep suing in the Southern District of New York. I don't understand this, but that's part of what we'll discuss. Carter Page has no remedy. And if Carter Page has no remedy, do any of us have remedy from illegal surveillance?
He waited too long, Robert. We'll get to it.
that's some of the excuses. A lot of the excuses is not statute of limitations driven. I mean, it's substantive in such a way that no remedy exists. If that opinion is upheld, basically impossible to sue for FISA violations, which the court itself seemed to say that was Congress's intention, which I don't fully accept. But it goes back to immunity. But it's relevant because of a major Electronic Frontier Foundation investigation that unveiled the scale to which police agencies are involved in massive geolocation spying on people across the country. While the FTC brought suit against another geolocation agency for how much it shares information, which incidentally and accidentally in the process, they confessed information, these government agencies bringing suit, that really revealed that 2000 Mules was factually correct in some of its claims about geolocation capability. But what it means for the ordinary person, I think, is still underappreciated and undervalued out there. And it raises questions about Supreme Court cases like Carpenter and Jones, which suggested the limited applicability of these things. We have the Navy releasing jet fuel into people's water and then not giving them adequate health care and trying to cover it up after the fact. Another gift of the Biden administration that was done just recently in Hawaii. We have a couple of Virginia cases. We have a pronoun case, school case, and a school system that claimed to be above the power of a Virginia grand jury to even investigate it.
The Loudoun sexual assault case. We're gonna get there.
Yes, and then we got shocking. January 6th crazy sentencing. We got the new name for BLM, better laundering money, that was disclosed this week. We got a huge case, ATF case. That was a big case. We got a football coach who won a big case over CRT firing. On behalf of Judicial Watch helped do that case. We got Starbucks getting sued for its diversity training protocols. Another company getting sued, another bank getting sued for discriminatory racial profiling in its grant and bank application process. And as you mentioned, we got Durham's last case that raised more questions about what Durham is really up to, given some recent filings in the case. FTC trying to shut down Walmart's alternative banking program and independent of MoneyGram and Western Union. But we can start with the smallest one on the scale. What we predicted did in fact come true in the Nirvana case.
We'll start with the Nirvana case just because nobody cares about it. Then we're going to get into, we got to talk about Biden and that beautiful, whoever thought that was a good idea, deserves a raise of sorts. Nirvana case, everybody remembers the guy who was on the Nevermind album with his little Schmeckle floating around in the pool, sued for various damages resulting from that image, alleging that he was exploited. It was, what was it, embarrassing? Like, there were a number of things, and alluding to borderline sexually exploitive content. This is, of course, after that same individual recreated the pose many times, seemed to have made his own adult life off of it. I'm not even sure if he had ever mentioned it again, if anyone would have known who he was. He had his lawsuit dismissed. There were a number of reasons, but basically he waited too long. He knew of the damages from an extended period of time and didn't file within the right time frame. Is there anything of any sort of lasting judicial import that comes out of that decision?
No, just that, if you wait forever to file suit, in his case, and he had kind of profited off of it, there was some evidence that he profited off of it at different times and then just selectively rewrote his memory. And some of the media coverage of the suit suggested it was a credible suit when it never was. It was a suit that was filed way outside of time frame and on very questionable grounds and was properly dismissed.
That's because you talk about latches when, by their own conduct in certain cases, there's legitimate reasons to dismiss the case. To purport that you're aware of the damages and then you were pressured into not filing suit, so maybe you could extend beyond the ordinary statute of limitations on the basis of impossibility to act, fine. When you're aware of it and you're actually exploiting it, and then at some point you say, well, I've milked it for all it's worth, now I'm going to go milk it on the judicial sense, then latches can apply, and you can't say you waited 2 weeks to file the suit, Trump. Too sad, too late, too bad, you waited too long. So this guy waited too long, tacitly accepted it, was well aware of the damages, any wrongful act, exploited himself. But I guess it might be a decent segue, Robert, into the Trump debacle. The last week of developments, I didn't misunderstand anything in the Justice Department's filing that they had actually raised the argument that Trump was not entitled to injunctive relief because he had waited 2 weeks to file the injunction and therefore was time barred from so doing.
I mean, the request for a special master really isn't injunctive relief. So they were just trying to say the ship had sailed and all, but again, that's not really a good argument for denial of a special master. So I think they would have been better served bringing their action sooner, but there was no legal requirement that they bring it immediately.
And a special master is an ongoing thing. It's not like a punctual come in and stop something at day one and then you're never done again. It's someone who has a lasting role throughout the investigation.
Well, at least through the raid, through processing the raid. Okay. So, you know, it's a document process. So all that happens when a special master gets appointed is that all the documents are transferred to the special master that are in any way in question or in controversy. Ideally, all of them, period. But and then the special master filters through on an ongoing basis what might be privileged and what might not be, and then sometimes allows argument on what might be privileged if there's a dispute or controversy. So the government normally doesn't like special masters simply because it delays their processing of information. But them saying, hey, we've already processed it, well, then what's the prejudice to a special master at all? Then there's no prejudice to a special master. The only prejudice is to if the government got it wrong and seized information that clearly wasn't relevant. And the court also released this week the more detailed inventory, the kind of thing that should have been in the inventory given to them at the scene, in my view. But and that detailed inventory badly undermined the government's case, because it showed very, very few documents that were actually seized that are even labeled classified, and that about 99% of what they seized is not even labeled classified. And so their only excuse for that is that they were presidential records. And that's been fully adjudicated, which the government has yet to address, and many of the media defenders of the government's position has yet to address. Which is, I'll occasionally get comments on the YouTube channels where I say, Twitter, these people that clearly don't know what they're talking about. Oh, they're like, no, presidential records are independently determined to the president. And it's like, no, they're not. That's already been litigated. It's already been adjudicated. That's already been decided. The only case to look at it says the president has the unilateral, non-reviewable authority to determine what is and is not a presidential record for official record-keeping purposes, which has to be the case because everybody else's power comes from the president. President's the only elected constitutional official, period. The idea that some unelected official could have more power than the president in the executive branch means our constitution is gone. And so the argument on that, but basically they seize like framed photos. This is a complete crock. According to Trump, they searched Barron's room. They searched Barron Trump, his teenage son's room.
Robert, where do you think he was hiding the documents missing from those empty folders? They're in Barron's underwear drawer.
And the implication is that they were looking for blackmail material. That they were looking for by Trump. That one aspect is they were looking for the deep state docs that I think Trump took with him that weren't there. 48 folders. They made a big deal out of. Took photographs of those folders that everybody's like, oh my God, Trump is done. He's finished. It's amazing. Some of these people, God bless them, just panic. How do you keep accepting? I mean, honestly, even some good people like Technofog and some others. Why do you keep taking the government's word at face value? Quit doing that. It turned out that all those scary looking photos of, classified, deeply secret. There were empty folders. The photo with empty folders.
Let me steel man this in as much as possible. And I'll get to that super chat question in a second. The implication, and you have some, what's his name, Kirshner? I don't know who the individual is, but you have this guy named Kirshner who used to be a federal prosecutor saying, if this were anybody else, the fact that the folders were marked classified and empty, where do the documents go? Now, so let's, where might the documents have gone, Robert? Why might a folder marked classified be empty?
Well, I'm sure that Trump's, two different things. It may be that, of course, Trump kept a lot of those files. Which again, he's entirely legally entitled to. This idea that you can have somebody that has more power legally, constitutionally, than the president makes no sense at all if you understand our constitutional framework. But it's how the bureaucracy really thinks. When Biden in his Red Sermon speech this week is talking about democracy, they mean the deep state. They mean the bureaucracy, that these people are a threat to the deep state. These people are a threat to the liberal bureaucracy. These are unelected people. These are people our Constitution gave no right to whatsoever. The president could eliminate their entire position. You know, so the idea that he could somehow has no legal right to declassify is just insane. But putting that aside, the other plausible explanation, the only reason you'd keep those folders around is if you already turned over the documents. If the documents inside those folders were part of what was already produced back when they subpoenaed them. So they were making an implication that was completely false. And everybody just took it for granted that the feds were now not lying I mean, it's amazing. Everybody panicked in response to it. Aside from the fact they're fundamentally legally still wrong about what is and isn't classified, still legally wrong about what is and isn't a presidential record. They were completely, I mean, they should have known the feds were lying. I mean, that's all they've done. And it came out this week. Last week, it came out the FBI division running this is what I call the heart of the deep state, the FBI. Same people who ran Russiagate, et cetera. Now it came out this week because some even Andrew Weissman, that corrupt hack, is recognizing that there's some serious problems with how Justice Department has handled this. And he was trying to run excuses for them, as Julie Kelly pointed out. And it's because it's the deep state wing of the DOJ that's the only attorneys they're allowing in the case, which, by the way, is another sign of a corrupt deep state operation. They don't want U.S. attorneys from Miami involved. They don't want U.S. attorneys from New York involved. They don't want anybody else involved other than their little deep state ring inside the FBI and the Justice Department controlling this case from top to bottom, which means it's about primarily, my belief, getting back deep state documents. John Ratcliffe, former Office of Director of National Intelligence, confirmed that this week. Lee Smith, who writes for Tablet, wrote Plot Against the President. That was the basis of Amanda Milius's good movie. Also wrote that this week. Paul Speary, head for Real Clear Investigations, had previously written that. So multiple sources are confirming what I said on the day of the raid, an hour after it was published at VivaBarnesLaw.locals.com, where you get exclusives every night.
I am intelligent by association, Robert, because I'm next level under. Like, I'm next level, not at your level. Would not necessarily have gone there. And now when I heard that they were going through Melania's drawers and Barron's drawers, so they might be looking for the compromising documents. Are they looking for their own stuff? Like, they might find something embarrassing about Barron that they can
weren't looking
use.
I mean, maybe. I think they were desperate to find what they were looking for. But my guess is they thought they would have the ancillary benefit that they would get some sort of blackmail on Trump. Because, I mean, this is getting to go through his. But the thing is, old Trump believes in Barnes's lesson. Never in writing, always in cash. And whatever you do have in writing, you don't keep at your house. Anybody knows Trump knows he doesn't like email. He doesn't like text. He only talks verbally. You're not going to find much of him in writing with old Donald. Cash depends on the circumstance, but my guess is they were hoping to get a little lucky because they're the kind of idiots to have dumb stuff on their computers, to have dumb stuff sitting somewhere around their office or their house, right? That they think everyone is as inept as they are.
Like, they think Anthony Weiner, they think, who was the other guy that, John Podesta emails, point.
I mean,
well,
Petraeus. I mean, these people had your easiest to prove crimes in the world.
Oh, sorry. I'm just bringing up chats as we go. Okay, so Robert, so the empty folders, it's not going to be a question of he gave the information to Russia. I mean, I made that as a joke, but that seems to be the implication.
I'm sure that's the fantasy. But why would you keep the folder? You only keep the folder. I mean, maybe he was having fun trolling them. But the only other reason you keep the folder is because the documents were already taken out of the folder. And so and given to them as part of the subpoena process. If you were going to give the documents to someone else or keep them for, and again, he legally can give them to other people. He could legally publish them to the entire world, right? So, I mean, that's his power. I mean, that's what the Constitution gives him. You got a problem with it, take it up with the Constitution. So it doesn't matter, but he wouldn't leave behind an empty folder if he gave it to someone else. I mean, that makes no sense, but that's the way these people imagine Trump being like a nitwit criminal.
Well,
nitwit criminals.
I meant like Hunter Biden, like the crap that Hunter, like documenting, keeping us. Oh, we'll find him smoking crack with a prostitute because that's the way we think. So but Trump has to be that stupid. Maybe Barron's smoking crack and maybe bought Barron's.
Well, I mean, I
Hunter.
Definitely thought the fact they went at Barron's stuff. And Trump even hinted at that he believed that they were going. The reason why they went through Melania's personal stuff, the reason they went through Barron's personal stuff, is they're hoping to find something on one of them, and they were obviously unlucky and unsuccessful in it. But I mean, you look at the Kennedy family, you know, the entire family was targeted. I mean, once John Kennedy turned in their minds against the deep state by 1962, it wasn't just John Kennedy that was targeted. Robert Kennedy was targeted. The kids were targeted. If you followed them over time, you'll see a pattern. You know, if Robert Kennedy Jr. talks about running for office, suddenly an extraordinary story will leak negative about him from certain circles. And so the And you know, a lot of that kind of stuff, you know, worked with different audiences. So it's what they live for. And do a confession through projection. You know, the compromat, you know, they're obsessed with the idea that the Russians had something on Trump. The reality is, you know, they're the kind of people who have something on them, and they wanted to get something on Trump. And they clearly were unsuccessful, and Trump's rally this week was a sign of that. I mean, their big win this week was in the courts in the District of Columbia, where Carter Page's suit was dismissed entirely without a right to discovery.
Okay, we'll get there in 1 second. Just one more question, because I do sincerely want to steel man the arguments. When the media now is out on a frenzy that the documents were not marked classified, are they suggesting that the information was in fact classified and ought to have been, or are they just clinging to what they've got, which is documents that were not classified?
They have to excuse the fact that 99% of the documents seized were not even marked classified, which means they weren't subject to the whole thing to begin with. And so they're going to pretend, well, they must have secretly been classified. They just weren't marked classified. How does that work?
Okay,
so, and again, this is pretending that classification is a process outside of the president of the United States, which if people think this through, that's really both dangerous and absurd.
Imagine being such a point of sale system that you resort to searching a young man's room. Well, it's very telling.
I think they were looking for something. They're assuming that Trump's family is like Hunter Biden's family, and they never have been. I mean, and that's been one of the great testaments to Trump. Whatever you can say about his personal life and his personality, his kids are a constant testament that there's something to his character that's a lot better than pretty much every politician alive today.
Oh, but Robert, not according to Sam Harris. Trump cares more about himself than his own children. It's evident.
That's projection. That's confession through projection. Sam doesn't strike me as much of a family man. He's an inherited kid. He inherited all his wealth. I mean, he didn't earn it. He got it from mommy and daddy. But it's not a surprise. I mean, it shows the insanity of that world, but that's the kind of insanity that leads to that kind of speech. But it was, to me, the biggest legal news, unfortunately, in this setting was the Carter Page case that I hope the Supreme Court takes up. The DC circuit's not a likely circuit. And by the way, this was a district court judge appointed by Trump. It was very predictable because
I'll just read this part of it. We're going to get to the fact that the lawsuit was dismissed. Carter Page has no remedy. Just to bridge this from Trump to Carter Page, this is in the judgment. It's towards the end. As alleged, the FBI's conduct in preparing the FISA warrant applications to electronically surveil Page was deeply, quote, troubling. Indeed, the government has conceded it lacked probable cause for two of the warrants. And the FISC has found that the government violated its duty of candor in all four applications. This is the same Department of Justice, FBI, that we are now expected to not question. If you do question them, you're a MAGA Republican, enemy of the state, enemy of democracy. So that's the segue, because anybody who's scrutinizing and questioning what the Justice Department and FBI are doing with Trump now, that was what was true of them 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I'm sure they've changed. But Robert, Carter Page sued, I forget under what provisions, he sued for damages.
He sued under a bunch. So he sued under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. He sued under the Patriot Act. He sued under the Privacy Act. He sued under the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution, known as a Bivens claim. He sued under other related claims that come up within the the Federal Tort Claims Act. So he brought every conceivable claim. And a judge appointed by Trump, who was one of his bad appointees, and you could know that because spent a lifetime, it came from the elite academies, then worked as a U.S. attorney for a long time, then was a big Bushite and was one of Bush's top counsel. Why in the world Trump appoint someone like that to the bench, who I guarantee voted against him every time? Extraordinary. And the judge finds excuse after excuse after excuse to prevent Carter Page from getting an iota of even discovery to support his allegations or accusations in the case, to even amend the complaint to add additional alleged allegations and facts in the case. And the most ludicrous part of her ruling is the Fourth Amendment ruling, and the most dangerous from a precedent perspective. Because the short answer is this. You have massive illegal spying on Page. She acknowledges that's not even in dispute. You have extraordinary efforts of deception on courts to obtain those illicit warrants. You have illicit use of those warrants and public disclosure to third parties to defame and libel Carter Page concerning them. If this case, you have Privacy Act violations of not correcting records or not giving records in a timely manner. If you have classic version of abusive process, the use of a process for political aims other than what it's intended for in a weaponized manner in an illicit means. And yet this judge says Carter Page can't sue at all, can't sue anyone in the government, can't sue the government itself, can't sue any agencies of the government, can't sue any people on any claim, on any basis, at any time, to even get discovery or the right to amend a complaint. And she makes it sound like she's, you know, bothered by what took place. If the judge was being honest and was actually bothered by what took place, she would have granted amendment with leave with direction about how to get there. She would have allowed discovery to take place in support of those amendments. She did neither. In fact, she said the most disingenuous statement in the whole order is her statement that the reason why there's no cause of action under the Fourth Amendment, because she makes a ridiculous ruling, in my view, that the Fourth Amendment is the everything, if it concerns FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Fourth Amendment magically doesn't apply anymore. Because, again, the U.S. Supreme Court has said Bivens is still alive in the Fourth Amendment. Now, again, it's because of conservatives on the Supreme Court that we don't have more constitutional remedies. It's conservatives on the court that are leading the fight to gut civil rights in America in a range of cases. And there's a lot of people still in denial about that. But we discussed it when it came up earlier this year, where they gutted Bivens cases for anything other than the Fourth Amendment cases. So federal government can violate all your rights and you can't sue. Ha ha ha. That's the great constitutionalist on the court. Seth Sabin. They also foolishly believe that standing doctrines and other doctrines are really good to limit courts' judicial actions. No, all it does is keep conservatives from being able to sue because liberals will screw them and conservatives will screw them. Congratulations, you dimwits. But what took place here is a classic Fourth Amendment violation. That's what this is. The search and seizure of information about an individual without probable cause. It's a Fourth Amendment violation. Violation of reasonable expectation of privacy, et cetera.
The judge acknowledges that they lacked probable cause for at least two. And I forget what the problem was with all four. So she admitted. It's admitted. The question is now, Robert, motivated reasoning being what it is, how's she going to get out of it?
Yeah. And what she does is she says FISA is an exception, which makes no sense at all. It's like she said, so what she's doing is she's playing off of this political prejudice by conservative judges to try to gut you to expand immunity, expand standing, say, hey, we got to let Congress set these rules. And some of that is well-intended. It's just going to be misapplied and is poor political handling of these cases, in my view, aside from being, I think, substantively wrong. All these cases should be decided by juries. Immunity shouldn't exist. Whether you did it in the name of the government can be a defense, and that's it. And you have to have complied with the Constitution for it. That was the understanding at the time of our founders, and for a long time thereafter. The standing doctrine was made up in the 1920s by lazy judges to get rid of political cases so they could play Pontius Pilate. That's what it was, what it is, what it'll always be. I'll never respect it until the day I die. And afterwards, even less. I'm a ghost. But so what she says is that's her whole claim. And then part of her excuse for this is to say, especially there's no need to recognize a Bivens right to sue in the Fourth Amendment context for FISA when there's all these other remedies under the FISA laws and under the Patriot Act and under the Privacy Act and under the Federal Tort Claims Act, while turning around and gutting every single one of those claims as to Carter Page, showing how there is no such remedy. If Carter Page doesn't have a remedy, nobody's got a remedy. So to pretend there's a remedy is a lie by that hack of a judge, that Federalist Society judge, another failure of the so-called institutional conservatives who've delivered another abomination on the bench because she can't follow basic constitutional law. What that was a fraud on the people, claiming there was real remedy when she was gutting it for the only person who could have such a remedy.
Robert, I'll just ask the question. There was a portion of the claim was time barred because it had to have been filed within one year and not 3 years. So that has nothing to do with the Fourth Amendment violation. What's the statute of limitations for a Fourth Amendment violation?
Well, he was well within that. The difference that there was like some statute of limitations were 1 year, some were three, some were four. So it depended on the particular provision. Some were two.
So some of the claim was dismissed time barred. I forget which one it was.
And some was exhaustion of remedies claims. You know, it my view is it seemed to be convenient. In other words, she would find a basis somewhere to dismiss everything. It was like if she could. And while pretending to be deeply concerned. Bottom line is she doesn't want the deep state to be sued. I mean, that's the reality. Carter Page's case was about deep state corrupt actors being able to be sued on an individual and institutional level. And they don't want it to happen. Now the deep state knows all they have to do is label their action as part of national security and foreign security, foreign surveillance intelligence, and they have no liability anywhere outside of very rare circumstances. She said the only way you can sue, she said you weren't acquiring or collecting information unless you're the one putting the tap on the phone, which doesn't even exist anymore. I mean, that's very rare. The people don't do physical taps on phone anymore. That's not necessary. It's done 100 other ways. So there's nobody that's physically, directly, personally doing that. So under her interpretation, FISA also has no remedy anymore. Foreign Servant Intelligence Act has no remedy anymore. So it's gone. It's finished. It's done. Under her interpretation. And she pretends she's not gutting it when she really is.
Because people have to appreciate, like everybody does, I think, watching us now. But in Carter Page, this was the case in which the FBI lawyer pleaded guilty to falsifying evidence. The judge herself, I didn't know it was a her when I was reading the decision, concluded that the FBI, what did they say, lacked candor in all the applications. I forget what the terminology was. I showed the section.
Well, these are things she couldn't dispute because they've been found by other courts. They've been found by the government itself. They've been admitted and confessed to.
So she acknowledges all of this and then nonetheless committed crimes in unlawfully spying on Carter Page, all of his claims dismissed, and a dismissal with prejudice.
Well, so with prejudice, no right to amend, no right to discovery, none of it. So to the question in the locals live chat that we got going on, there's not much remedy involving the courts, unfortunately, other than impeachment. The courts don't discipline themselves and so on and so forth. So the only remedy for Carter Page is to go now to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is an overwhelmingly liberal, deep state oriented court. Like here, even when you don't get liberal Democrats, you get deep state protectors, as people have witnessed in the January 6th cases. So his only hope is the U.S. Supreme Court clarifies its issues concerning Bivens and its issues concerning these statutes in particular, because these are matters of critical statutory interpretation. But I wouldn't bank on it, sadly. This U.S. Supreme Court has not been good in this area. It has been gutting civil rights and civil remedies, not expanding them or extending them. It's been good in a range of areas on the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, interpretation of the Fourth Amendment, but not in the areas of suing the government, not in the areas of getting remedy from the government. There it's been mostly bad. My liberal friends in the civil rights community are quite rightfully unhappy with this particular court's direction because it's found lots of excuses as can't sue for this reason, can't sue for that reason, can't sue for another reason, can't sue for over here. It's either immunity or standing, congressional interpretation. The only one they said you could, you know, someone could, they've said you could sue private employers over a range of things, like in the trans context, et cetera, but not the government, not deep state operatives. And national security is the magic mojo that everybody gets to hide behind. And all those people that excused and defended the attacks on Julian Assange and Edward Snowden should now see why Assange and Snowden were right. The most corrupt actions and the most corrupt actors will disguise what they're doing as national security. We should be the ones to determine whether they really did it in national security's interest, not them behind hiding their lies behind the protection and the pretense of patriotism.
I'm just pulling up the decision as you're talking, Robert, and remembering now all of the things, the issue that Carter Page ran a very successful business and then was outed as an asset to the CIA, which is very bad for business under normal circumstances.
Well, both. I mean, first he was he was a rising person within the coming Trump administration, within the Trump campaign, which had a range of benefits to him professionally and personally and politically. And so first they remove him from that. They subject him to massive inquisitive interrogation investigation. But they don't just leave it there. They next leak to the press that he's under investigation. So they destroy his reputation and career. And the way they got their information is pretending that he was a Ruski spy when actually he was a patriotic American trying to do good business around the globe and would repeatedly provide information to the U.S. government if he came across anything questionable or problematic or if they requested he do so. But, of course, that information ends up becoming public as well. So the net consequence is he's wiped out. I mean, he's removed from the ability to do what he used to do solely by the lies, deceptions, and misconduct of the government. And according to this federal judge, there's no remedy for that. But don't worry, there's a bunch of statutes that do provide a remedy for it, just not in reality.
Well, I'm just going to read this because it's like you go to a party. My dad once went to a party once upon a time. It was like a magician, but it was just a guy speaking English, but in convoluted ways that the game was to see who would respond to this individual as though they were making coherent sentences when the whole gag was that they weren't. And so you'd see everyone was polite, you know, had a martini, like, oh yeah, you're making total sense. But the whole gag was that the person was speaking doublespeak the entire time. Listen to this doublespeak of a judgment. Similarly, Page alleges that the individual defendants intentionally provided false information and omitted material facts in all four applications. To the extent these allegations are true, there is little question that many individual defendants, as well as the agency as a whole, engaged in wrongdoing. Even so, Page has brought no actionable claim against any individual defendant or against the United States.
That's because she radically restricted, said there's no Fourth Amendment right to sue anymore just because it's in the FISA context, and then radically restricted the meaning of the FISA laws to say that you're not conducting, performing, collecting, acquiring personal information unless you're like the fit person doing the tap on the phone and listening to the call.
It's amazing. In part, it's because he faces three statutory roadblocks. First of all, Congress has not created a private right of action against those who prepare false or misleading FISA applications. Well, isn't that convenient? That's quite. Well,
and the problem is the next statement. It actually has created a law that has civil liability for those who conduct or perform electronic surveillance. She's just pretending that you're not conducting or performing electronic surveillance when you're the one creating and using the electronic surveillance.
It's judicial doublespeak. Second,
it's all designed to be a deep state cover up without looking like the fraud that she is.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, good luck in appeal, Carter, and enjoy the cost that comes along with that. And we'll see where it goes. So Carter Page is SOL, as we say.
By the way, they burned a range of, you know, they burned Carter Page. They burned it. Like, there's always talk about worry about CIA informants and whatnot. And they're somehow trying to tie that to Trump, which is nonsense. It's the same game. The Julian Assange thing, is still idiots out there that believe things about Julian. It's like I occasionally run into conservatives who believe nutty things about Nelson Mandela still. It's like they don't realize one of the world's greatest human rights activists and leaders in the last century. Was mischaracterized and misportrayed by the deep state in the West, like everybody who protested the deep state, as a commie terrorist. If you disagreed with them, you were a commie terrorist. Didn't matter who you were. Didn't matter whether you were Priest Romero. It didn't matter who you were. Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, all of them. The reality, as I'll detail more in a bourbon tomorrow at vivabarneslaw.locals.com, is that he was a great human rights, civil rights activist. If you listen to his own words at the time, that's clear. There's people who still believe that. There's still people who believe that Julian Assange hurt classified sources in American national security. Utterly false. This is always the lie that they tell. It's always the lie. But look at what they did. They actually ruined a potential high-ranking source and anybody affiliated or associated or vetted or vouched for them. They're the ones getting informants outed, not anybody else. And this is who and what they're all about.
Oh, and Robert... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say it goes to what's going on more systematically, which is if you can't sue the feds, can you sue the state or local government? Hopefully you can under 1983 laws. At least they recognize that if you go down the power chain, then they do allow suits to occur. The higher up the power chain goes, the more they don't allow suits to occur. That's the only real consistency in these cases. But the big Electronic Frontier Foundation report this week unmasked that all that geolocation information is actually being used by local police forces all across the entire country to map out your entire life. And that's because people didn't appreciate or understand how apps really work and why they're free.
Okay, Robert, I'm not as familiar with this one as I should be, but please do carry on.
Just explain to people, explain to people how an app is actually free.
Well, I think we all know the old paradigm. If it's free, you are the product. We've seen, by the way, it's, I know more than I'm pretending. In the entire MO of 2000 Mules and how they went about documenting it was they bought data from cell phones because all of these apps track real-time user data, movement, geolocation to a box, no pun intended. And that's marketable information. That's sellable and you sell it. Now, the particular lawsuit that you're talking about now, that's about where my knowledge ends.
Oh, so there's two different things. One is the news story that broke. The second is the FTC suit. So the news story doesn't yet concern legal action, though it's a variation of what Carter Page experienced. But what is that local police forces are using the information from the gatherer. Something, what was it called? Yeah, Fog Reveal. That's apparently the licensor. So what happens is you get your app. The app tracks you. The app then sells your personal information by tracking your geolocation to another data vendor. That data vendor in turn sells it to someone up. It goes up usually the food chain. They do algorithmic data, utilizing the whole tracking of every place you went and what's affiliated with it, using mapping and other information that's out there, kind of like 2000 Mules did, but for very different purposes, not to expose criminal conduct, but to kind of engage in it, to get to know everything concerning you. They combine that with all the other data they have. This is where people are surprised when I talk about jury selection, if they're doing their job, the kind of data that's out there. The data that's out there is, you know, one, there's every time you purchase something, period. So those are your financial records. A lot of that has been gathered together and sold to third parties, including your subscription services, et cetera. There's all the things you've ever liked or interacted with in social media. That information is gathered. That information is sold to third-party data vendors. There's sometimes certain information concerning politics, concerning church, concerning the rest. The state definitely has that. The feds have that all the time. Some state governments have it because they can take your tax records and create another different data points of entry for the algorithm, algorithmic aggregation that becomes who you are. And then they add this geolocation component to that to fill it in. And so consequently, it's almost Minority Report, what they can predict potentially, and to be able to explain and track people. What this is a real life, your phone, your tablet is a real life GPS tracker on your body that goes everywhere that phone or tablet goes. And they're aggregating that data in live time. And so now, what's interesting is the U.S. Supreme Court has twice, first in the GPS tracker context, said that's a Fourth Amendment violation to do that without a warrant. Seeking cell phone records at cell towers, they've also said is a Fourth Amendment violation in the Carpenter case when it was explicitly for the purpose of geolocation. So how are these local police forces trying to circumvent that? Well, mostly probably by trying to keep it secret that this is what they do. And how do they do that? They'll disguise the source of their investigation, just as they did with in Trump's case, too. With what you do is you do circular logic. You do information laundering. You pretend you got it from a third party source. You pretend there was an informant. This was famously portrayed in the great show The Wire, which was about Baltimore, but has a lot of great, interesting little components to it that are very informative and very apt and accurate in many contexts. Not all of them, but many. But one of them is that when they are running an illegal wire, they're like, well, how do we get away with this illegal wire? They'll say, oh, we'll just come up with a confidential informant. I've had actual cases where I've outed actual fake informants on these exact grounds. And so what they do is they go into court and they lie about the source of the information. They don't tell people that they're getting it in this mechanism because it does have Fourth Amendment ramifications that a lot of these cases around the entire country may be illegally sourced cases. So all the lawyers out there should look at everything to say, does it make sense how they got this information, where they got it from? Maybe they're lying. Maybe they got it illegally from this data gathering service. Now, their other argument is going to be that they got it voluntarily because people signed up for the app. The problem is most people who signed up for the app didn't sign up to give their geolocation to third parties. And what the Supreme Court said in the case of the cell wire, in the cell tower case, to me is applicable and analogous here, in that if they just extend it, the app can use your geolocation information for the app's purposes, that should be considered the scope of consent, not for things other than the app's purposes. Because clearly the ordinary person doesn't know, hey, you're giving away your private information to anyone who wants it, because then most people would not even take the free app.
What is going to be made of the argument that you've read the terms of service that everybody scrolls through and clicks OK to at the end, therefore it's tacit, if not explicit?
I mean, that's going to be the argument. But my point is that I don't think that's what people understand the case to be. Those are adhesive contracts, so they should be interpreted against the drafter. And that's basically what the Supreme Court said, because cell phones have the right to sell your data in many cases. And so comparable arguments were made in the cell tower context. And the Supreme Court said, no, you have a reasonable – all that matters is, do you have a reasonable expectation in that data? And that's independent of a contractual – whether you would have a contractual claim against the app company for sharing it with a third party. This is about whether the government could seize it without probable cause of a crime. And the court's position was, you still have a reasonable expectation of privacy because you assume that information is limited for the purpose for which it is shared. And so the third-party sharing doctrine does not apply in that cell tower context as an exception to the Fourth Amendment. To me, it's the same here. Everybody's getting these apps is assuming they're sharing information solely for the purposes of the app. They don't realize that the app can turn around and sell it. The app may claim it's in there, it's a waiver inside buried in the adhesive contract that nobody reads in their long terms of service. But even if that were the case, in my view, under the Carpenter precedent, that does not give any of these local authorities the right to search your records without probable cause.
Now I'm just thinking of that IntelliDrive app that I downloaded onto my phone, where my car insurance tracks my driving to make sure that I'm not braking too hard at any given light.
And this is where the deep state loves it. The feds love this because they get all of it, right? They collude with big tech. So they get all of Facebook, all of Twitter, all of Google, all of YouTube. Plus they get your tax records. Plus that's why they want a central bank digital currency, because then they can track every transaction in live time and cut it off in live time. And you can add that to these other components and you can see that, you know, information is control. And this would be the ultimate means of control. The more statist a government is, the more obsessed it is with controlling the narrative and gathering intel. That's the sine qua non of a statist society of any totalitarian form. And that's why they like this so much. And that's another reason why Deep State didn't want Carter Page's case to go anywhere, because it could unravel things at multiple stages of just how rogue and reckless this spying is at the national federal level now, and now it's extended to the local state level. But lawyers out there, others out there should be suspect of whether information has been stolen. And I believe this will lead to more probably class actions to come, because in this local state government context, they do allow you to sue under 42 USC 1983.
I'll bring this one up just because I'm not complaining. You signed up on your own volition, knowing you're going to be tracked. You complaining now.
But being tracked for what? That's the argument for cell phones, right?
Well, but
you know you're giving your cell phone information in exchange to be able to get a call and get a text, give a text. You are in turn giving that your geolocation information to the cell phone company. Does that mean you also are giving it to the entire world? And the Supreme Court's point was no. You have a reasonable expectation of privacy that it will only be limited for the purpose for which you're sharing it is what it will actually be shared for. There's a reasonable expectation of privacy beyond that, because otherwise you start doing the math and all of a sudden your privacy is eviscerated in the modern age. All of a sudden you have none. You've waived everything because you have a utility bill, because you have a phone bill, because you ever let an inspector into your house. I mean, you could keep extending this to where you would just obliterate the Fourth Amendment. And that's why in the modern digital age, it should respect what is common practice within the community at the time. And clearly people signing up for the apps do not. Most of them don't know they're giving any tracking information, but of the few that do, they believe that it's for the app, not for the world.
And I'll say this, I just take for granted everything is being tracked in real time on my phone. Yeah, it's not because I downloaded one extra app. Like, you have the phone, you get text messages, you have Google Maps. I mean, the only people who are saying you're idiots for doing this, you must have no cell phone, and then all the better. But once upon a time, Robert, I'm old enough to remember, white pages. Once upon a time, you could get a book and find out someone's name, address, postal code. At any point in time, just flip to the page. And you
can, and a lot of that. Oh, then that's easily out there these days. But now it's, you know, what magazines you subscribe to, what political causes you contribute to, what religion you're a part of, who's your neighbor, who's lived with you, but also where you've traveled. Like, now this relates to the other suit in this context. The Federal Trade Commission has brought suit against, what's the name of that company?
Yeah, I want to pull it up too. It, basically, collecting data, selling data of, hold on, Robert, let me get it. Let's see who does it first. Walmart.
Kochava. So I think is how it's called. It's either Kochava or Kochava. So it's licensed in Delaware, operates out of Sandpoint, Idaho. So what? It's one of these companies that gathers all the other data vendors' information and repackages and resells. And the FTC brought suit. And the reasons for the FTC bringing suit are that their allegation is that basically they're, you can look at it, yeah, a format that allows entities to track the consumer's movements to and from sensitive locations, including, among others, medical care, reproductive health, religious worship, mental health, temporary shelters, domestic violence survivors,
addiction
recovery. Now, this is the liberal version of this, obviously, because this is the Biden administration FTC. But you can apply this and realize how many other places it goes to, right? Have you been going to any MAGA meetings lately? You know, the especially given the red sermon speech we saw this week, you can see all the other places it goes. Now, the FTC's claim is interesting because the FTC is seeking injunctive relief. They lost the ability to sue for monetary purposes without DOJ approval last year by a U.S. Supreme Court decision that determined the FTC had been breaking the law for about, you know, 30 years or however long it's been in formation, which was interesting by itself, but it always takes the Supreme Court a while to recognize sometimes legal reality. But their claim is that this is substantially injurious to consumers without consumers being able to take reasonable steps to avoid it in ways that the risk exceeds the benefit to the public of this. And I think where they're going is along the lines I'm talking about, which is they're going to say this has to be like the cell phone context, that the information, in order for it to be net beneficial to a consumer and for it to be considered within the consumer's informed consent, because that's what a lot of these principles really are, that whether it's called contractual waiver, whether it's called a release, whether it's called no reasonable expectation of privacy, it all boils down to, was there informed consent in giving that information to someone else, or you reasonably knew of the high risk of that? And I think they're going to say it's unreasonable unless it's being limited for the purposes of that app. So if it's Pokemon or some of these other things, you might have a reason for geolocation for the purposes of the app, but you should be able to turn it off when the app, and this is another thing that these apps deceive people in. People don't have the app open and they don't realize the app's still open. They can try to close the app and they don't realize the app's still open because the whole purpose of it is constant geo-tracking, because that's how they monetize their app. That's how they pay for it. They're getting intel on you. Tell us about yourself. Tell us everything about yourself. Tell as much as you can about yourself. Tell us those very things you don't want people to know about yourself. And so we can market and monetize that data and information. And the FTC is like, that's really a consumer violation. They call it unfair. And the definition of unfair is something that injures consumers that the consumers cannot reasonably avoid. So step one, does it injure consumers? Step two, does a substantial injury? Two, is it something consumers can reasonably avoid? And third, does the risk, does the detriment, the injury outweigh the benefit of the product? And here, I think the FTC is fundamentally right on a lot of this. If they were successful, it would provide a great restraint. My own, you know, skepticism is that they were only interested in limiting this dangerous power when it was used by Dinesh D'Souza in 2000 Mules to expose election fornication. They're like, oh, that's a sensitive location, going back and forth to steal, you know, put some extra ballots in the box. rather, I mean, but though I share the concern because I don't like this at all. I think people have been tricked and duped into giving away their privacy in ways that's not within the meaning of, put it this way. There's been as much informed consent in giving away your geolocation information as there has been informed consent in getting vaccinated under the COVID-19. So I'll put it that way. That's how much informed consent took place. I think the suit is a good suit, and the expose of the police a good expose, and hopefully we see remedy from it. But it's a world that has been mostly legally untouched for the past decade or so, and it's one of the most dangerous invasions of privacy and your liberty that can exist. Now, by the way, there's a lot of ways to get to fool the matrix. You know, it's not always a bad idea to have, you know, one phone go with other people that do other things and not bring your phone with you everywhere. Not necessarily have your phone in your own name. There's a lot of techniques that you can trick the matrix into not knowing what's going on, but people shouldn't have to resort to those to protect their privacy.
Someone says this, by the way, Alexa, how are you today? Missy the cat. And the very funny thing is I've been getting, I'm obviously on some sort of text scam. I've been getting those very text messages unsolicited from unknown numbers for the last 5 days now. What are your rates? Alexa, what are you doing today? I hear you're in the Naples region. I've been getting them like left, right, and center. I don't know what's going on. The bottom line, I think most of us do take for granted we're being exploited, we're being tracked, but for commercial purposes, not for investigative purposes. Where it becomes very problematic is when authorities say, holy shit, we can go buy all your data, find out how close you were to the Capitol on January 6th, get your text messages to see if you're talking about having had, you know, carried certain firearms with you, where you left them, et cetera, et cetera. And well, they use it to turn
about the others. Like, you know, the, you know, what about people who go to gay bars, right? What about people who go to certain kinds of places? And I mean, the it provides extraordinary blackmail potential,
yeah,
as well. And that's what all of it is. I mean, the old Facebook joke, right? You know, five things. You like five things on Facebook. Facebook knows you better than a friend. You like 10 things. Facebook knows you better than a good friend. You like 50 things. Facebook knows you better than your spouse. And that was the whole scam. You integrate geolocation with that. You can see how it could be used for nefarious purposes. How it can be used for good purposes is expose a crime in the case of 2,000 mules. But it is much more likely to be used for illicit purposes than justified purposes. And again, in my view, in those contexts, for example, 2,000 mules, you could lawfully request that information if it was properly gathered. In other words, that's where you should go get a warrant, show probable cause that we believe there is a group of people doing this. Here's what the information, here's what our basis is. And they had enough basis of indirect inferential evidence and say, we only want these particular files. And then those files could have been produced and thus satisfied the concern. But that should go through that process. It shouldn't circumvent that process, which is the way the current system currently operates.
And I presume to the extent that unless it's otherwise necessary, it would be anonymized and therefore not particularized, and people wouldn't – the blackmail aspect.
It is each person has a unique ID associated with their phone, which is very tricky to try to undo. And then it's not very hard to link up that to an actual name. It is another leap to do. But it's not too hard. Now, of course, it might leap up. It might link up to a name that isn't the name of the actual person who had that phone. In fact, I would guess in a lot of those 2,000 mules cases, their phone will not match their name if they have an IQ over 50. So that's why it's not as easy. People are like, oh, it should be easy to track the person. It's like, not if they are. If they put it this way, if it was easy to track the person, that would be evidence they thought what they were doing was on the up and up. Still, may be an illegal method of voting, but they didn't think they were doing anything wrong. If you couldn't, that's more evidence of people who knew what the score was in advance. It's not that hard. I've had clients in the alternative product distribution business who educated me on the means of communication outside of normal trackable forms. And I was startled at how easy and simple it was.
People are saying burner phones. I just operate on the basis that I'm being tracked and surveilled all the time. Not in any paranoid, delusional sense. Just, yeah, I have no privacy.
Well, there were people taking photos of you shopping, fishing off the deck yesterday.
Well, did people tag me on those?
No, it was just in locals. It was just in locals. They felt half bad about it. They're like, oh, I saw Viva. Okay, I took the photo.
I don't care, just as long as like no one's gonna like, you know, touch me. But okay, that sounds crazy. No, like it's it like the best thing to be blackmail free is like don't leave the house. But there's always something on somebody that you could possibly find somewhere. But Robert, speaking of, you know, tracking everyone's last movement and then sending them to jail for 5 years. Ugh, what was the January 6th? There were two cases that came out this week. Who got sentenced to 10 years? 10 years.
An ex-cop defending himself, defending others against Capitol Police who were attacking protesters.
So, for
basically self-defense, but it's in the District of Columbia. So the judge was a hostile. The jury pool was hostile. Grand jury's hostile. Prosecutor's hostile. You can't get any semblance or sense of justice whatsoever. And you got a sentence that's 2.5 times longer than the average rapist gets in America. 10 years in federal prison for an ex-police officer coming to the aid of someone else and pushing against another Capitol Police officer who was attacking and assaulting a protester. And so it's just one example of the inanity of this. But for those that don't know, almost impossible to appeal. The federal sentencing processes give so. And here's a problem brought about largely by conservatives, which is crazy sentencing ranges. Right. They have federal sentencing ranges that basically I favor discretion in jury and judges and juries over sentencing commissions. But I would prefer juries first. But the way it should start is that it should be capped from the beginning, right? When you have these open-ended federal criminal charges where it's like, oh, between 0 and 40 years, it's like, what is that? You're just giving a judge an excuse to issue crazy, politically prejudiced, disparate sentences. That they should look at the actual crime and come up with a realistic sentence, and that should be the cap. No more giving them lots of range and discretion. And that cap should be limited. We have evidence that outside of people who are ongoing imminent risk to safety and security, which is really a rare group of sociopaths, psychopaths, people who cannot constrain their criminality. Most people by the age of 35 to 40 quit being criminals that have a criminal record before. And it's the certainty of punishment matters far more in deterrence than the severity of punishment. Indeed, the severity of punishment at some point becomes counterproductive. But here it can become – here it's politically partisan manipulation of the sentencing process because too much discretion was granted by Congress to the federal judiciary in the context of criminal sentencing, such that it's almost impossible to appeal those. Very, very hard, big burden to overcome. You can just highlight the absurdity. The judge just made a United States Supreme Court justice by the Democrats. Gave softer, much softer sentences to people and was critical of even any harsh sentence for people who had see child pornography on their computers than a guy who defended a guy who had been a long-serving representative and defender of American interests. This wasn't a career criminal. To be reserving these criminal sentences for.
It's because
they're imminently dangerous. This guy wasn't a danger to anybody.
No, but she said, Robert, the having it on your computer is less grievous than having actual photographs of it and whatever. But I don't want people accusing you or me.
That was a level of insanity. And what she wouldn't acknowledge was that put it this way. It's invariable that people convicted of child assault are deeply involved in child pornography, that those two are deeply connected. It's not like. It's more contentious when people argue adult pornography leading to sexual assault. That evidence is frankly tenuous. It's not tenuous when it comes to child pornography and child abuse. That is a strict one-to-one ratio in the sense that if you commit assault, you'll have it. That doesn't mean everyone who has it commits assault, but it's a strong indicator of a propensity to do so. And it's why we criminalize it. We consider any participation of it at any level to be an imminent risk to the well-being of our community, and I think justifiably so. Yet, those kind of people get a year, 2 years, whatever. Asimov's kid in California got a sweetheart deal by Robert Mueller when he was the federal U.S. attorney there, who had one of the biggest stashes of CP in American history and got to walk clean and didn't serve a day in jail, after which the W. Bush family rewarded him by making him FBI director not long after Boys and Girls. It's a disturbing sentence. Somebody who was just like outside the Capitol with a sign or something got 30 days. It's like, whereas people who illegally attacked the church and the White House when Trump, during the BLM riots, those people are getting paychecks from the government. They're writing them checks for even trying to protect the church, for even trying to protect the White House. That's the level of insanity that we are at. And as an example, it leads into a person who got sued because the plaintiff was libeled for just taking a photo of being anywhere connected to January 6th, which was the sister of the Marine veteran.
Alec, but hold on before we get there, because I don't want anyone saying Biva and Barnes are strawmanning the decision. The judge sentenced this guy to 10 years. I heard it, and I was like, okay, there was video evidence. It should be pretty black and white to convict this guy and convict and sentence to 10 years. He claimed self-defense, whether or not it's self-defense, but I mean, let's just see the video. This is, and I hope this is the right video. Let me just get the audio off.
You're standing with a line of DC police officers trying to protect the West Terrace of the U.S. Capitol. Listen January to this. 6th. 54-year-old Thomas Webster burst through
this
the mob with a profanity-laced tirade.
Oh, my goodness. 10 years. Hold on, sorry. I just want to bring it up so that it's full screen.
Webster's attorney now filing court documents claiming a D.C. police officer used excessive force against Webster. It is unclear if Webster's attorney is referring to the officer in the yellow coat who initially pushes the Marine Corps veteran and former New York City police officer before Webster charges. Webster's attorney also telling the court he plans to use the body-worn camera footage to prove excessive force used by the officer happened before Webster's alleged criminal acts. After the initial skirmish, the video shows Webster on top of an officer who is knocked to the ground. In an interview with prosecutors, that officer said as Webster tried to rip off his helmet, he was choked by his own chin strap, leaving the officer unable to breathe. In the District of Columbia, a person cannot claim self-defense to justify an assault on a police officer unless that officer uses more force than reasonably necessary. And the force used in response against the officer must be no more than necessary for a person's protection.
So, Thomas Webster. So that's the video. Just so everybody, and you all know what I think of that. 10 years? Maybe not.
That's insane. I mean, it's utterly ludicrous. It's utterly ludicrous. You have someone with no criminal history who has an extended history of service to protection of the American people that is at an environment which, by the way, the Capitol Police was gassing people, attacking people, provoking people, doing a range of things that in every other context during the BLM riots were considered absolutely horrific and tyrannical and oppressive and the rest. Again, such that they're writing checks to the people who did worse acts during the BLM riots in the District of Columbia. And here he is mostly responding initially, complaining about what's taking place as a former officer, as an officer who understands that this is not supposed to be the proper procedure for Capitol. But Capitol Police are a joke anyway. There's political hacks, okay? That they're not real police in a traditional sense. And so it's not like they do daily policing of any consequence beyond cover up various crimes that members of Congress commit. I mean, that's all they really do. So he's saying this is wrong, and it escalates, and he's attacked first at multiple levels, according to him, and he says the body camera footage proves it. But because of the circumstances he's in, he cannot get a fair and impartial trial. Not possible. And then he's sent to 10 years? 10 years in federal prison? I mean, that is ridiculous. I mean, it makes little sense at all in terms of proportionality, in terms of sensibility. The only logic, nobody has any doubt that if this was a BLM person setting fire to a house someplace, they wouldn't get 10 years. And yet somebody who gets into a controversy with a police member about whether they were properly policing, that led to what? For a minute, he thought he couldn't breathe. For a minute, he thought he could. That's it. So, he had his chin strap on in such a way he couldn't figure out whether he could breathe for a minute. Apparently, he wasn't hurt, right? Because where's the detail of that? That would be all over the news for 6 months, for a year, for 2 years. Had it happen. Didn't happen. So it's another outrageous verdict by a corrupted, politically corrupted judicial process that thinks it's sending a message, just like the Red Sermon, to the dissident population to line up and behave, line up and obey. And what the court system doesn't understand is it's the court system that is impeaching itself, indicting itself, incriminating itself for its open political partisan prejudice. More and more people are waking up, particularly the law enforcement, because this was a veteran police officer. More and more law enforcement-oriented groups and constituencies are waking up to just how corrupt the American judiciary is, and some of the worst are federal judges. And you scrape the bottom of the barrel, you'll find the Southern District of New York and the District of Columbia.
Well, it goes full circle back to the beginning of the stream where, you know, the cops are seeing it and they have to worry about defectors within the RCMP tipping off the protesters. But I do want to just say, I want to say one thing. This is not a cover my own ass. This is a cover my own dignity. I brought up a chat that said, if you're going to get 10 years for that, implying you may as well do worse. Here's the thing. No, and don't. The reality, though, is when you don't need people to commit the crimes that you want them to commit to punish them severely, and you do it anyhow, there's a very real risk that you create this, you disincentivize people not to break the law when you destroy their lives in a disproportionate manner for any manner in which they may have broken the law. And we've seen other cases where they just fabricate alleged crimes out of whole cloth. The whole point is you don't give them the fodder to do that, period.
Oh, yeah. Well, you look at King, you look at Gandhi, you look at the mistakes in some parts of people like Nelson Mandela, that when they took the bait in response to the bad actions of the government, usual violence of the government, in Mandela's case, King and Gandhi did not. Mandela did. I mean, basically, you know, you wanted just civil rights in South Africa. What happened is that, the South African police, one of the most ruthless and criminal organizations that a lot of conservatives, by the way, a lot of people on the right justified and defended South Africa's horrific regime, one of the worst regimes in the history of America, of the world, in the 20th century. You're talking about money laundering, drug laundering, human trafficking, you name it. A bunch of people got together and protested the 1950s, and they just decided to shoot them all down, you know, killed about 70 people, killed a bunch of women and little kids. Naturally, that radicalized Mandela. So Mandela aligned with the people that would provide arms and funds. Some of those were communists. Hence, he got identified and got put in the book as a communist, started doing subversive resistance and revolution, like I hear a lot of people here in the States occasionally say. And what happened? Within a few years, he's arrested in prison, and so is the whole hierarchy of the ANC. And he lost an audience to large parts of the West that he otherwise had. So it was a mistake. He himself has acknowledged that he should have stuck with the King Gandhi style. It's very natural to respond to horrific actions of the government with an instinctual response that is exactly what they want. That's what the Red Sermon speech was about. It was, as Jack Posobiec noted, entirely intended to provoke a reaction because they didn't get what they needed out of January 6th. The whole world can see this is an overreaction by the government, not an overreaction by the people and the protesters. And so as long as people maintain that spirit, the same spirit Trump made his speech in this weekend in Philadelphia, then that won't happen. We won't escalate to worse and more dangerous problems because that's what they want because they need it. They need something to discredit their opponents. And right now, everything they're doing is failing. They're not getting the provocation, the response that they wanted. They're not getting the reaction they keep inviting. It's like that meme where the guy's like, you know, he's poking the little frog, you know, he's poking him and he's like, he has like an FBI hat or something. I was like, please do this. Please do this. That's what that whole speech was meant to do. I mean, why do you think they use V for Vendetta visual imagery of the president from V for Vendetta? They want you to react like V for Vendetta from the film. They want a violent resistance, not a peaceful resistance, because as long as it remains peaceful, they're in trouble.
I want people to see this. I just want an image. This image right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to come up.
That's a good one. But yeah, it's the same red and black dramatic imagery, the same anger, the same rage. I mean, it's a little bit of 2 minutes of hate from 1984, Biden's speech, but it's mostly this. And that's not accidental. That's intentional. That was meant to trigger this response and reaction. Well, you see it in like, but the reaction has come continually from the left. because you look at what Alec Baldwin did to that military family, and they're the ones overreacting. You know, again, folks, Alec Baldwin pulled the trigger. He's a murderer. Deliberate murder. Alec Baldwin murderer.
Well, let's call it, we'll call it manslaughter, Robert, because he thought it was a blank. He didn't think it was a bullet. He thought it was going to scare him.
Manslaughter is a form of murder, so it's all murder to me. A family from Wyoming has filed suit against Alec Baldwin. What happened is their young brother, in one case, the husband of one, father of one, some of the plaintiffs, but the main person involved was his sister. He goes over to Afghanistan in the debacle that was the Biden method of removal of Afghanistan under the deep state pretext that they built up a great little independent woke version of Afghanistan that basically collapsed within days. Her brother was killed at the airport, was one of the people killed because of inadequate security and poor design of withdrawal from Afghanistan. Alec Baldwin saw it and sent some sort of check to a GoFundMe that was meant to help the family, that was set up for the family because he had a young wife and a baby girl on the way that he would never get to see. Then Alec Baldwin discovers that his sister was there at January 6th, wasn't inside, wasn't arrested, wasn't charged, didn't commit any crime, completely clear, just one of the many honest protesters of what happened in the election. Baldwin goes nuts, starts harassing her, kind of stalking her almost online, and then attacks her in an Instagram post and then continues to attack when he sees the post goes well. It's his fans that then start going after her, start sending her messages about she deserves to die, her brother deserved to die, deserved to be raped, assaulted. Somehow the media managed never to cover that, right? If anybody on the left ever gets anybody that goes nuts on them, the media says, see how dangerous these people are? But when the left does it all the time, to people on the right, the media doesn't cover it at all.
And I would say, does it deliberately? We talk about, they throw out the accusation of dog whistles, which is people hearing things that aren't actually said. Then there's, I don't know, what's the actual thing when it's an actual dog whistle? It's not a dog whistle anymore. It's just a whistle. But Robert, I just want to read from these are allegations, people. They're not proven fact yet, but I suspect this is easily provable. This is the private message between Baldwin DMs this woman. A woman, like, he DMs her after she posts the picture commemorating her brother. It says, Baldwin, when I sent the money, like, this is a guy, it's not charity when Baldwin or the likes of Baldwin give you money. It's extortion. It's I own you and I own your future actions. When I gave you the money for your late brother out of real respect for his service to this country, I didn't know you were a January 6th rioter. Royce, this is the plaintiff. Protesting is perfectly legal in the country and I've already had my sit down with the FBI. Thanks. Have a nice day. Baldwin, I don't think so. Your activities resulted in the unlawful destruction of government property, the death of a law enforcement officer, factually incorrect. The only saving grace for this is it's a private message, but I think he might have actually suggested this publicly.
He later on targets her publicly.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. I just don't know if he says the same things publicly to some extent, but doesn't. I don't know if he shares.
Yeah, he doesn't repeat all of them, but he uses words like rioter, insurrection, and then it's by innuendo a lot.
Oh, yeah. And then here, an assault on the certification of the presidential. I reposted your photo. Good luck. Yep. What the hell is that supposed to mean?
And he knows what he's doing. I'm going to harass you, put you on blast. I have 2 million Instagram followers. I'm going to make your life miserable. Just because I disagree with, even though he knew, or had reason to know, but most likely knew that she had been clear. She didn't do anything. She wasn't a rioter, wasn't an insurrectionist, wasn't any of those things. Wasn't, again, insurrection is a specific federal crime. So if you're going to make that accusation, you need to establish that you have a reason to believe it and that each of the elements are present, which of course he doesn't know what he's talking about. So he didn't do it in that sense. I mean, his only defense is that he's Alec Baldwin and he's too stupid to know what the facts of law are. But beyond that, he clearly did libel her and the family because he goes on to put him on blast, deliberately put him on blast.
Calls her an insurrectionist. I mean,
calls her an insurrectionist and does it also by innuendo. Like he says, look at all these things these terrible people did. By the way, here's one of them, right? So he can say, well, I never specifically said she did A, B, C, and D, but I said A, B, C, and D, and then said, here, look at a photo of one of them. And that's the problem he has. Now, so they brought defamation claims, I think false light invasion of privacy claims. The only thing I think that's weak about the case It's not the facts. It's not the law. It's where they sued. So Alec Baldwin lives in New York. They're from Wyoming, all the different plaintiffs. And they brought suit. I think $25 million in damages is what they've listed or identified. Everybody's got a propensity to put some big money out there to get a press release. I'm still not a fan of that, but it is what it is. But my problem is, why bring a suit when you're a January 6th person at all, if you were there, period? You're a Trump supporter, period, in the Southern District of New York against a liberal icon like Alec Baldwin. The chances you get a fair justice, fair judge, a fair Second Circuit, or a fair jury is just remote. You got to get all three, and you're just not likely to. And watch this suit magically disappear the way a criminal prosecution against Alec Baldwin for murdering a person has also not come about. And my only, Sarah Palin's people filed in New York. I keep saying you don't have to sue in New York 9 times out of 10. If it's the only choice, I understand it. I've had cases in New York where it's the only place we could bring suit. But this was not a place they had to go to New York to bring. People don't understand that about libel law. He targeted her in Wyoming, knowing she was in Wyoming. Sue in Wyoming, not New York.
I was going to say people don't appreciate you can sue in the jurisdiction where the damage occurred, which is not necessarily where the only publication may have occurred or the defendant resides.
In my Covington case, I sued all in Kentucky. Now, Kentucky's got unique personal jurisdiction rules, so we got to figure out whether I can sue or not as we go up through the appellate food chain. I want to establish new law on those grounds. But you can sue anywhere. These are big personal jurisdiction disputes. Back in the mid-1980s, were decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, including the Calder case, which established you can sue in any state for defamation as long as the defamation was published there and injury occurred there at any level. So you might get transferred between venues later on, but force them to do that transfer, as happened in some of Nunes's cases. Don't do it out of the gate yourself, because the Southern District of New York is not a place to get justice if there's any political influence on the case whatsoever.
Someone says Wyoming tossed it. I don't think Wyoming tossed this. If it gets tossed in New York, Robert, it's a state claim. They can file in another state. It's not precedential.
So if they filed in state court in Wyoming, they filed in federal court in Wyoming, it wouldn't be dismissed. It would be transferred. Right, because federal courts can transfer between venues upon request. No doubt about that. If it was filed in state court in Wyoming, then that can be dismissed if they don't think there's personal jurisdiction over Alec Baldwin. But I don't see that there clearly is personal jurisdiction over Alec Baldwin in Wyoming, in my opinion. But you would run that up through the flagpole. So to my knowledge, I didn't see anything in the suit that referenced the prior suit in Wyoming.
Okay. I hadn't or heard
other,
that either.
You don't have to be limited to that. You can find other jurisdictions to sue in. The defamation is very broad. You don't have to always sue where the defendant lives or where the plaintiff lives. Now, I think in the federal criminal context, you should be entitled to the jury of your home residence all the time. I think that we should meaningfully enforce the venue provision of the Constitution that was intended in that direction, and what jury provisions mean as well. But that's not law anyway, as you can see, but it's happening January 6th cases. But the idea that, especially in the technology age, right, you don't know where Alec Baldwin made those messages or made those posts from. You do know he sent them to 2.4 million people, and you know those people existed in every single state of the union, and he knew that. So when he did that, he deliberately subjected himself to the personal jurisdiction of every state in this country, and that's the greater legal authority today.
Well, let me just see this. People are saying Royce, Wyoming. Let's see if this happened. Wyoming Baldwin lawsuit. She refiles defamation. Okay, hold on. So this is from East India. Refiles defamation lawsuit against Baldwin. Here, let me pull this up just so we can see if this occurred. Share. Hold on. Chrome tab. Family. Here we go. Okay. CNN, the family of the fallen U.S. She files a lawsuit against Alec Baldwin. She's seeking $25 million. They accuse Baldwin. She was present. Where is the sister and widow filed a similar lawsuit against Baldwin in Wyoming in January? A federal judge dismissed the lawsuit in May, finding that it did not have jurisdiction over Baldwin since he lives in New York. So is this a federal versus state claim issue, Robert?
So if they brought it at federal court, and then that they can... There are two options. One is he could have transferred. If he chose not to transfer to the Southern District of New York, then they can appeal that challenge. So the I wouldn't have brought it initially in federal court. Now, maybe they brought it in state court. Maybe it got removed to federal court. Maybe federal court claimed not to have jurisdiction over Baldwin. How does the federal district court not have personal jurisdiction over Baldwin? That's really ludicrous. But maybe they got a bad federal judge in Wyoming that got the draw.
But why so not?
The,
a, why,
but
why
that
not
a, would not be. How is it if federal they don't have personal jurisdiction over Alec Baldwin in Wyoming? Federal district court can't find that. Really. So now I think that'd be a good appellate challenge in that particular cut. Now they may have not been as specific in certain aspects of the allegations. So the allegations that need to be raised in the defamation personal jurisdiction context is that Alex Jones is that Alec Baldwin knew at the time he filed suit, or at the time he took his action that were the basis of the filing of the suit. That he had Wyoming supporters on Instagram and deliberately and directly sent a message into Wyoming that he knew that the plaintiffs lived and resided in Wyoming and that he deliberately tried to cause them harm in Wyoming. Maybe they didn't allege that. Otherwise, if the federal judge said otherwise, the federal judge is wrong. So the but you do get into that. You get about 1 out of 5, 1 out of 10 judges who in the country who have delusional views about personal jurisdiction. Mostly they're politically expedient excuses for not meaningfully addressing the law. So that would be the problem I would have with it, unless there's something unique to Wyoming law. Sometimes what, but this is federal court.
It went from federal court to state court in New York, which.
No, it went from, so some parties filed suit in federal court. That got dismissed. So new parties plus prior parties filed suit in New York, but okay. Both cases federal court. To my knowledge, no state court proceeding was ever initially brought, unless it was removed from Wyoming state court to a Wyoming federal court.
The broader question I have on this, when I'm reading this lawsuit, the damages seem to come not from the defamation per se, pun intended, but the damages come from the pile-on. There is no recognized cause of action for triggering a social media.
No, it's the injury that's caused from the tort. So that the piling on is part of the injury caused by the libel because of how many people he hit.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs, government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
This is the People's War. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started? Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rick, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
To Revolution in the Morning
at Revolution Radio FreedomSlips.com.
Good morning, everybody. We are live on Studio A with everybody's favorite politically incorrect host, Mitchell Bob.
Yeah. Hey, hello. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are truly witnessing the evolution of revolution. That everybody just kind of follows along in a docile manner. I knew something was wrong.
Okay, now it's time for the regressive establishment's worst nightmare. And the world's most dangerous radio host. Tell them how you feel, Mitchell.
Yeehaw!
Gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, machine keeps turning.
Yes, the war machine keeps turning. Welcome. It's Labor Day. It's time for Monday Madness, coming at you live from Franklin County, Virginia. I'm your host, Mitchell Bupp. Welcome to the Revolution in the Morning show. I hope you're having a great day. God bless you. Thanks for tuning in to get the straight truth, not the mainstream media mind control. Because if you're on the script,
Your mind is not yours. It was captured a long time ago. Your subliminal cortex is not yours. It is wholly owned and operated by the deep state of this world. So come on down and join us at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, and join us today. You can get the straight truth, not the mainstream media mind control. Remember, ABC, NBC, CBS, fake Fox News, they're on the same page or the back of the same page. You can flip both sides and you'll see the same thing. You won't get rational thinking. You'll get a mass psychosis of groupthink. Especially when they declare, those who do not wholly believe what we say, you have wrong think. That's the world we live in today. Oh, you're a crazy liberal, or you're a deplorable, or you're mega, ultra mega. Now, new and improved extreme mega. Yeah, so come on down and join us. God, when people say they're woke, all they mean is, well, I'm brainwashed in a certain way. My brain is broke, but it only fits in a certain mold. It's strange that more liberals don't watch NASCAR. I mean, all those left turns. I mean, damn! You want to talk about a chance to appeal to liberal audiences. All NASCAR has to say, come on down to the track. All we do is take left turns. I'm just kidding. Anyway, listen, ladies and gentlemen, you're being brainwashed. I can see it on social media. I can feel it. I can feel it. Because I see the effects on other people and their knowledge or lack of knowledge or point of view is so twisted. Or, you know, hey, people are afraid to say because their career demands that they act a certain way, that they toe a certain line, that they follow a certain, well, politics if you're in the FBI. Yeah. Anyway, call in and listen. That's right. You can call in and listen to the show, Studio A, all the shows on Studio A, and all the shows on Studio B. You can call 518-906-1839 to reach Studio A. 1-859 to reach Studio B. That's 518-906-1839 to listen to Studio A. 591-859 to listen to Studio B. So come on down and join us. Catch us on iTunes, TalkStreamLive.com, Roku TV, iTunes, TalkStreamLive.com, I said them too. How about TuneIn, and Shoutcast, and Winamp, and Assessify, and Radiomony, and many, many more. More than 40 streaming services carry Revolution Radio. Yeah. So I hope y'all are having a great day. God bless you. Don't forget the archives. They're free. at Revolution Radio. You can just go over there and put in Rev Radio as a username and rocks with an exclamation point. And you can go in there to the archives and get any show, I believe, that's recorded. And I think most of them are, well, all are recorded except at a certain request from people, or they leave and they move to a new station and they say, hey, could you guys please remove our other archives? I said, well, I don't know. I think most of them are there. Maybe some bits and pieces are missing when we had technical difficulties or equipment servers went down or they were attacked several times, over the years. Since we've put in our new security protocols, it's been better. That's what I would say. Anyway, so come on down and join us over here in the Matrix chat room. Yeah, thanks for joining us over there. Good morning, Driver Dan. Yeah, I hope you're having a great day. And don't forget, Omega Logos is in there somewhere, I'm sure. Over there in Australia, Batsman was here, posted a little earlier. So come on down and join us at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio. Man, I'm really trying to figure out where to start the show. Well, to kick this pig, so to speak, in the snot, in the snows, okay? Another psychological attack on half of America, or 80 million Americans, by, Pedo Joe, as you know, and I have zero tolerance. I have zero tolerance for, child predators, okay? I'll tell you that right now, Joe Biden. But anyway, yeah, what else? Joe Biden made a speech, this supposedly addressed to the nation, and had a red background with Marines essentially calling, those constitutional patriots of the mega variety, of the mega stripe, of the mega movement, which is just really an extension of the Tea Party movement, in my opinion. But hey, that's me. Anyway, and it's also outsiders in the political system. The Ron Paulers, kind of libertarian type people, they won't say it, but they support Trump a hell of a lot more than they support the insiders. Yeah. So Biden's use of Marines standing behind him, talking in a fashion that could be considered hostile to the American people or certain segments of it. Yeah. Anyway, that is actually a violation of long-standing federal policies and regulations and use of the military as symbolically standing behind the president. Now, here's the problem. There's a lot of things that Joe Biden could have talked about, but he didn't. He made this a political attack on Donald Trump and a political attack on a movement of constitutional patriots and call them against the Constitution. It's absolutely ludicrous what Joe Biden said in his speech, considering what we know. What we know today about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Ashley Biden, okay? From what we know today, if there has not been a special counsel, has not been brought in by the U.S. Justice Department to look at the crimes committed by Hunter Biden, and all clearly there were crimes committed, many crimes, that the Ashley Biden diary that points to her father or grandfather, was it his grandfather? Hell, I don't even care. I don't only. Look, and have zero tolerance for that shit. And then Hunter Biden, oh, look, there it had finally dropped out on me completely. I may not even be on air because it's showing that I'm off air. There, I'm back. In and out. That's why my computer didn't want to work there for a minute. I got knocked off the internet. Yeah. Yeah, anyway. So, it's sheer crazy. But Joe Biden's daughter taking showers with your 11-year-old daughter and then having this reputation for being touchy-feely among children that you're around. And then see them repulse against you, see them pull back and jerk their heads away, and you know, and you just continue, Joe. I'm sorry, Joe. You know, we got a pedophile president, and you know, this guy is just, you know, some puppet that's pooping his pants. You can see by his gait of his walk. And that his neurological system is working on shutting down, which also means he can't think, which means he's really not running the presidency, which means that Susan Rice and Obama's three hands, so to speak, are the ones that are essentially running the government. You know, there's a reason that Gavin Newsom went to Washington, D.C. when Joe Biden was out of town. There's a reason. Because he was meeting with the real shadow government while the puppet was out of town. Yeah. I've always been on a search for truth to unravel the shit end of my life, so to speak. You know, the problems of my earlier life and how I ended up where I am today and the path that I took and what mind control systems and how did I end up from where I was when I was a child to halfway through my life to where I am today. And you look in the world and some people never question. That's all I do is question every damn thing. Because I don't trust much of anything. I'm sorry. That's me. But as the world is a confusing place, and you guys heard me talk before about what I call, you know, the Stanford Milgram or the Milgram Stanford Prison Project on a national level, right? The national Stanford Milgram or Milgram Stanford Prison Project, right? I mean, people don't think about that. And I ran across an article this morning, and I said, well, this makes a little, lot more sense, right? And they list five of the psychological experiments that explain the modern world. And the first one is the Milgram experiment, right? Subject A is told to conduct a memory test on subject B and administer electric shocks when the person makes a mistake. Of course, subject B is non-existent. It's an actor. The electric shocks are not real. Actors would cry and ask and plead for help. And a person would come in, a volunteer, and they would be a guy in a white coat, kind of. And they would only say, well, you know, do your job or do your duty, right? So they were actually, there were people that if they had the authority, they would actually shock a person to death as long as they weren't responsible. As long as the blame is off on somebody else, as long, you know? Milgram coined the term diffusion of responsibility. Think about that. Diffusion of responsibility. All the doctors, all the nurses, all the people in the medical system that are going to say, well, I was just doing what I was told with the vaccine. I was just following orders by, you know, wearing a mask and then using Resmidvir and doing all this other stuff. I was just knowing and watching and seeing the carnage right before their friggin' eyes. Of course, that takes the cognitive dissonance. That's another one of these psychological tests. The second one, of course, is the Stanford Prison Project.
Yeah, this is where it all happened in the summer of 1971. Right down this corridor in the basement of the psychology department is where we converted these offices and storage rooms to prison cells. And we had students like yourself, college students from all over the country, play the roles of either prisoners or guards. This was the yard, the prison yard. Here in this closet was solitary confinement, the infamous hole where the guards put prisoners for punishment.
Yeah, and what did they find out?
Yeah. Well, this is where it all happened.
Hey, what did they find out? They found out that prison guards became sadistic. Prisoners became obedient. All this despite no real laws being broken, no real legal authority, and no real requirement to stay. If you give people power and dehumanize those below them, they will become sadistic. Just as Joe Biden had the Marines, you know, I mean, just as would it be considered sadistic for what the medical system has done, essentially kicking people out of society, out of hospitals, out of refusing to treat people that are unvaxxed? Would that be one of those things? I don't know. But we have to understand, you know, we essentially saw this all through COVID, is that when you start treating people a certain way, you move to dehumanize them. When you treat people as mega and call them extreme, they have been dehumanized in the eyes of others. That's what Joe Biden did the other night. Yeah. Now, here's the one that I have never heard about. Here's one that I didn't know anything about. This ASH experiment.
The ASH experiment is one of psychology's oldest and most popular pieces of research. A volunteer is told that he's taking part in a visual perception test. What he doesn't know is that the other participants are actors, and he's the only person taking part in the real test, which is actually about group conformity.
Please begin. The experiment you will be taking part in today involves the perception of line length. Your task will be simply to look at the line here on the left and indicate which of the three lines on the right is equal to it in length. So, for example, if you...
The actors have been told to match the wrong lines. The volunteer will be monitored to see if he gives the correct answer or if he goes along with the opinion of the group and gives the wrong answer. In the first test, the correct answer is two.
One.
Two.
One.
Once again, the correct answer is two.
Three.
So they're given all the wrong answers.
Three. The ASH experiment has been repeated many times, and the results have been...
And so what happens is one-third of people, even in the face of actually seeing for their own eyes, they will go with what the group think is, what the group says.
I support it again and again. We will conform to the group. Again, we're very social creatures. Damn. We're very much aware of what the people around us think. We want to be liked. We don't want to be seen to rock the boat, so we will go along with the group. Even if we don't believe what people are saying, we'll still go along.
One.
Group dynamics is one of the most powerful forces in human...
Yeah, so here's a break. We'll be right back with some more Twist Your Brain stuff.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
What the heck is the Truth Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio! Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio!
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Yeehaw!
Can't take much more. Nothing wrong with me.
Something's got to give. Come on down and join us. FreedomSlips.com, Revolution.radio. Don't forget also, in the midst of all this, you have a strategy of tension. You have all kinds of different psychological operations and operatives taking advantage of you every day. Now, the ash experiment that I talked about right before the break, I understand the conformity stuff. You know, I never really thought of it like that, I guess. That's not what I thought it was. But, hey, I'm learning. I'm not some, I'm just an uneducated idiot. No, I look and try to learn and observe, and most people don't question why. And I'm like, what the fudge, not even why. I mean, really? And so, anyway, did you ever hear of Festinger's cognitive dissonance experiment? Yeah, I thought this was a good one for a way to explain why we are the way we are today. The subject is given a repetitive and dull physical task to perform. Originally, it was turning wood pegs, but other variations use different tasks of this experiment. After the task is complete, the subject is instructed to go to prepare the next subject. Actually, it's a lab assistant. For the task by lying to them and telling him or her how interesting the task was. It is at this point the subjects are divided into two groups. One group is offered $20 to lie, and the other is offered $1 to lie. The conclusion that after lying to the fake subjects and being paid their money, the real subjects take part in a post-experiment interview and record their genuine thoughts about the task. Interestingly, the $20 generally told the truth, that they found the task dull and repetitive, while the $1 group, more often than not, claimed to have genuinely enjoyed the task. Yes, you know, listen, I mean, it's crazy. But these people would take less money to be essentially dumbed down.
Each subject's assignment, to turn each of the wooden pegs a quarter turn to the right, then to start over and turn them again and again and again until the experimenter tells him to stop. It is the most boring and fatiguing task we could devise. Our purpose was to provide each subject with the same dull job so each would have a similar negative experience. In order to obtain the scientific data we need, we use a little subterfuge and say we're studying motor performance. Afterward, they will be told the truth.
Okay, that's fine. Let me tell you now what we're actually studying here. It's the effect of preparatory mental set on performance. Half of the subjects are doing the job cold, just as you did. The rest of the subjects are prepared by being told that the experiment will be very interesting and enjoyable. In fact, lots of fun. Now I have a somewhat unusual request to make of you. The next subject is waiting right outside, but the fellow who ordinarily gives the spiel isn't here. I wonder if you could possibly take his place. As a matter of fact, we figure we'll be needing someone in the future, so I'd like to offer you a $20 retainer and have you remain on call for us. Would that be all right?
$20? That'd be fine.
We'd like to give you a dollar as a sort of a retainer and have you remain on call with us. Would that be all right with you?
Yes, that'll be all right.
So we'd like to offer you a retainer of $20.
We divide the group. Half will get $20 to tell someone the dull task is interesting. The other half get $1 for the same job. They all agree to tell an obvious lie.
Okay, thank you very much. The next subject is waiting right outside.
In reality, the subject meets one of our assistants, trained to get them to publicly commit themselves to this untruth.
They gave us some pegs to turn, and, turned them for a while, and it was a lot of fun. It was sort of interesting, I guess.
Really? Well, that's strange, because a friend of mine took the experiment.
Yeah, so, you know, listen, in other words, people will lie for less money than more money. Isn't that some shit? Crazy as it seems. And really, here is the coup de grace. Here's the coup de grace of your societal mind control shit. In the 1960s, scientists at Harvard put five monkeys in a cage with a stepladder in the middle. Atop the stepladder was a bunch of bananas. However, each time a monkey tries to climb the ladder, they all get sprayed with ice cold water. Eventually, the monkeys learn to avoid the ladder. Then one monkey is removed and a new monkey is put in his place. From different environment, from wherever. He naturally goes straight up the ladder and to get the banana. However, the other four monkeys beat the snot out of him. So he doesn't go up the ladder and get them soaked in ice cold wet. It wasn't long that monkey learned not to go up the ladder. The second monkey was then removed and a new monkey introduced, and the pattern repeated. The monkey went up the ladder. The other ones beat four monkeys beat the snot out of the second monkey that was replaced, including the monkey that had never been sprayed with cold water. This experiment was repeated until none of the monkeys in the cage had ever been originally sprayed with cold water under the experiment. So an entire new crew. Of monkeys who never experienced the cold water associated with the banana up the ladder. None of them went up the ladder, and they beat those who tried afterwards. Why? Because it was always that way. Today, this is where we're at in many parts of society. Why are things the way they are? Well, that's where they've always been. So, yeah. I'm going to post this link in the chat room. Anybody wants to get it, it's also on my Twitter feed and my Facebook page. You can always see what I post there. Where are we at? I may even posted this earlier. I'm not sure. Yeah, I posted it earlier, but I'm going to repost it. Anyway, so, yeah, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Hey, there's Constance. Hi, Constance. And Popsicle Toes. And, I see Mace has joined us in memes. I hope y'all are having a great day. God bless you guys. Thanks for tuning in. With five psychological experiments. And if you look at the conclusions and then go in society, and when you're in society, when you're out looking around, just watch people, just watch society, watch our politicians, you know, attempt to deploy these policy or these psychological tools against we the people. Yeah. InfoWars has come out and said that Biden has spent 40% of his presidency on vacation. Yeah, on vacation. That sounds about right for Joe. Hey, meanwhile, if you're in Canada, in Regina, Saskatchewan, in a remote town, I guess, area up there. Well, it is kind of remote, I guess. You know, not for locals, it's just local, right? Police are searching for two brothers who are believed to have stabbed 10 people to death and wounded another 15. So that'd be 25 people with the stabbing by two brothers. Yeah. A hell of a thing, isn't it? What other news information we got going on here? Let's see. Dent, 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 dent. New Mexico town. Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. New Mexico has less than a month of water left, 20 days of fresh water left, I guess, in their wells, the way they're talking. I would think I would try to see if there's some kind of moisture gathering systems that might be able to be deployed in the air, but I don't know. I can't say. What else we got going on here? Sales of cheaper jewelry under $500, particularly, but mostly anything from $1,000 down at a company called Signet, which owns Zales and, what's the other brand they deal with? K Jewelers. They're saying that there has been a crash in the sale of jewelry. Well, yeah. I mean, people can't afford to go out and spend money, you know, on shiny stuff. They're too busy buying food with it. Yeah. Amazon temporarily shuts down all its solar rooftop systems all across the U.S. Why? Fires. Evidently, there have been numerous fires on top of these plants, or maybe that's what was the cause of the plant at one Amazon warehouse that burnt to the ground. And then it's this idea that, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't put this on top of $1 billion of inventory. No shit, really. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. I mean, to put it on top of your inventory, you know, sorry, but I just, you know, think you're asking for, well, a lot more trouble. Anyway, it's a sheer crazy world that we are seeing. Yeah. So people are now trying to blame Donald Trump for dividing this country when it has been such a team effort by Republicans and Democrats since before I was born, with the two-party circle jerk and the NSA, the CIA, and the shadow state rising in the midst of it, using bureaucracy to take over the nation. Mitch McConnell is a worthless piece of political dung. Yeah. BLM. Yeah. Looters. Yes. It appears lawsuit filed on Thursday in Los Angeles Superior Court accuses BLM and its leadership of essentially stealing millions of dollars. Shemaya Bowers and the foundation is accused of using it as his personal piggy bank and using it being a rogue administrator, paying his own consulting firm millions of dollars, $2 million in 2021 alone. Altogether, over $10 million of donor dollars was siphoned off by Bowers, according to the lawsuit. The assets that we built, the financial resources, the social media platforms, and the name Black Lives Matter have been taken from us and are now under control of consultants. Abdullah BM Grassroots, director and co-founder of the Los Angeles chapter, said. Anyway, so that was another organization that was launched, and the money was laundered into that. And, you know, they should do like the Democrat thing, you know, just take 12.5% as a transfer fee and pass it around to your nonprofits till you can pocket a quarter to half or more of the money. I mean, that's the typical nonprofit political money laundering scheme with Democrats and Republicans. However, you know, what we're seeing is some stuff like this. You know, here's one guy, and I don't know, he may drop an F-bomb right at the very end. I don't think so. I'm not sure, but here's a reaction, a good reaction, to Joe Biden's speech.
Look, I know everybody's pretty upset about this most recent Joe Biden speech. You know, the one with the red lights, where he's looking kind of like a pale Skeletor. just so angry. Don't be mad that he said a lot of Republicans are extremists. These are the same people who think a woman is anybody with an imagination who identifies as one. These are the same people that tanked the economy, inflated the price of living, brought us to the brink of war with Russia, cowered from China, funded the pandemic, ignored a fentanyl epidemic, food shortages, gas prices, amplified social unrest, took us to the verge of an energy crisis, and divided America at record speed. If anybody else made this many bad decisions, we wouldn't take a damn thing they say seriously. Don't let them upset you. They wouldn't know what an extremist looked like if it was fully dressed in body armor, burning down a city in broad daylight, and then walked up to them claiming to identify as a lawnmower, offering to cut their grass. Look, my dog has better judgment than these people, and I've seen my dog try to eat his own shit. Look, I know everybody's pretty...
All right, so, yeah, I mean, we have to, you know, you still have to take this seriously. The optics, and as I have said before, what most Republicans, independents, don't realize they are at war. They have a war mentality on your country to destroy, you know, everything. Yeah. I'm gonna see what this voiceover is.
Alright, this is getting serious. Oh my goodness.
Anyway, so these are riots and the BLM. Big looting mother knuckers
surrounded us, and it was like 150 people surrounding us. Bats, hammers, crowbars.
Well, there's too many visuals in this for you to get the real good picture of it. But, anyway, here's what a hack, who hates Trump had to say. Okay, this is Martha Raddatz, or whatever her name is. But remember, she is a rabid anti-Trumper, and she has Trump derangement syndrome. So remember, you have to understand the sources where everything is coming from.
And how much should Donald Trump be blamed for the division in this country? You heard him say last night, Biden is an enemy of the state. He has called the left-wing fascists in the past.
We know the rhetoric on both sides has been heightened. I don't think, people in mainstream America particularly like, you know, the divisive rhetoric. I think, you know, I wish the president could have been more like Abraham Lincoln, who really did. He did not condemn the Democrats in the South in that time. He actually brought them into the tent. And I think that would be the mission I would advise for the president. I think he failed to do that in this speech that he gave.
Look, Lincoln made one hell of a mistake for allowing the Democrat Party to continue to exist after the Civil War. When will the blacks in America, when will the cities wake up to understand that the people that wanted slavery are the people that they voted into control? When will Philadelphia and New York, California, Chicago, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., when will they wake up, or is it as if it's in the Five Monkeys experiment and the experiments with learned helplessness and, of course, the cognitive dissonance of people today? The world is maddening. It's madness. That's why this is Monday Madness. Because, well, the idiots come out, you know, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It seems like they try to hold their waters through the week. Well, sometimes. But understand, This country is knowingly, purposely being divided by the political class, by the private corporations that are the Democrat and Republican parties. They're private clubs. They shouldn't have access or be involved with the government at any level of a primary. A primary is the private club's private effing business. It's not anything for the public to be involved in. You gotta be a member of the club. And see, this is the problem. You know, they have the rubber stamp of approval and of authority of the, in the subconscious mind of people. Well, they're approved. They're Republican. They're Democrat. You know, they ain't one of those crazy libertarians or one of those independents that you don't know which way it's going to go. You already know that the people are sold out and have joined a gang. It's not a club. It's a freaking gang. Do you ever notice how quick when somebody stands out up against the gang? Do you ever notice how quick they're cut? They're slaughtered. They're eviscerated and they're out of politics shortly later. Yeah. The Democrat and Republican gangs control America. They're gangs. I love George Carlin. And calling them a club, that's too nice. They're a freaking gang. And the media today, ABC, NBC, CBS, and fake Fox News, nothing but propaganda. So come on down and join us. FreedomSlips.com. Revolution.radio. We'll be right back. And don't forget, donate. After a long day of research and trying to wake people up to what's going on in our world, I need to take a break and find my center. I do this by listening to music or watching a great movie. If you find yourself doing the same, then come chill out with me every Saturday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Studio B, Crypt Rick's The Decompression Hour. It's time to put down that research and crank your stereo.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm...